Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Greetings from Milton, Florida. So here we are on the, like I say, the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River in Milton, which is just down the road from Pensacola here in the panhandle of Florida. I should probably state that more often. You know, I left one word out of my intro, the word Florida. To this day, I regret it. I don't want to go in and spoil it and try and change things. And I don't know. I'll figure it out. But anyway, that's where we are. And today's kind of weird. I'm organized. I'm rested. I'm kind of like ready for the show. It's like things are falling into place. I'm like, okay, what's wrong? What have I forgotten? So, you know, it's whenever things are going too well, I start to worry. It's like, okay, wait a minute. You know, got my water. Life is good. You know, there's no lightning outside. So we'll just keep proceeding here. Yesterday, I think, was fascinating. And I just put a notice on Facebook, literally right before the show started, like about 30 seconds ahead of time. We were the only folks, I believe, I'm pretty sure, that had live coverage from a bus on the way to Tallahassee. And this was exciting because we had Citizens for Medical Freedom. We had some other folks that were, going to the rally. So we're going to find out more about that probably tomorrow when Cindy Cagle calls in. And Cindy is a representative group, Citizens for Medical Freedom. And she was quoted pretty extensively in an article. So we'll get to that in a little bit too. But there's a lot going on this week in the Florida legislature. And some of it's good, but a lot of it isn't. And it's very interesting. I mean, I tried, my best to get some bills out there, two of them in particular, for this legislative session. And, we're not recognized as the authority on legislation in Florida yet, but, hopefully, we'll get a lot more as things go on. The two bills I wrote, one of them on reforming the Parental Bill of Rights and the other one on reforming the public health laws. And in both instances, I took out the garbage and promoted the Constitution as supreme over both the legislature in terms of rights for parents and the people in terms of rights over the public health department. And so these, I believe, are critical, and these are also missing from all the legislation that's coming out of Tallahassee right now. They basically broke it down to four bills now. And if you look on the legislative website that I post, and everybody's posting, in fact, I got a great group. I got a new group here. And so let me put this on. I'm going to make sure these guys are public. I'm pretty sure they are. Just to be on the safe side, let me take a look here. I'm just going to scroll down. I did a lot of stuff. It was kind of funny. Let me just refer to their website real quick. Public, yes. Tell me you're public. Let's go about, make sure they're, yeah, it's a nonprofit organization, so I imagine it's public. Called Florida Freedom Keepers, and they were at the rally in Tallahassee yesterday too. Yeah, looks pretty public to me. Yep, okay, so we're good. All right, anyway, so they were there yesterday, and they posted a couple of sites that you can go to. And if you go to Florida Freedom Keepers, and then you get the first big with the verandas and the covered windows and all that kind of stuff, and they got pictures. What they really have that's useful is they got three websites. Tune into the floridachannel.org to watch legislators tomorrow at 9 Eastern. That would be 8 Central Time where I am here. I would catch the podcast because we're still on the air. The other one is update on today's bill actions. And that's the Senate and the Senate page. The Senate seems to be a little easier to read than the House. There are fewer senators, and they usually can organize a little bit better. That's where I'm going to take the bills from. And the other one is watch recordings and live meetings, and they have a website for that also. Both of these are really, all three of these are really good. So we're going to go over the bills. It's going to be, again, tedious, and you're going to go, Craig, why are you doing this? Well, we found some things. We found some very interesting things in the course of our travels through the legislation. One is that the governor asked for a mandate to be removed for people to be vaccinated by any means necessary. Well, all the legislature did was remove the word vaccinated, but they left in by any means necessary to be treated, which effectively means nothing. And there was a senator that also found that. And I'm going to take, I think it's Barnes or anyway, I'm going to get his exact name. That's in one of our articles too. And so he noticed the same thing that we noticed, which is, it's meaningless. It's a very typical legislative thing to claim something while passing nothing. And so this is why our bills on the Parental Bill of Rights and the redoing the Public Health Authority are definitely something. They are major changes in law for the betterment of all of us. you know, this is why I write them. It's a nice thing being, about being a citizen legislator. I don't represent a special interest. I mean, nobody's paying me lobbying money. I don't have, you know, massive donors that have a particular interest in screwing the people over. So I'm free to do, I'm free to actually write legislation that, that helps people. And I will teach you how to do it also. I mean, that's really what we do here. So that's what's going on. So they're a really good group. And so if you get a chance to go to Florida Freedom Keepers, that's kind of cool. Some of the other groups are private. So I'll talk about them, but I won't, you know, tell you how to get there because they're private. So that's how that works. There's something I noticed, and I want to get Gene in on this too, and then I want to sort of go into some of the articles. Give you a little bit of background. We've got an hour, then we've got David Jones joining us in the next hour from Santa Rosa Volunteers, one of our sponsors here at Action Radio, and the third hour is open. So we've got a lot of open time today. This is a great time to discuss the bills. In fact, the folks, particularly yesterday, who went to the Freedom Rally, if you want to call in and talk about anything that happened during the rally, I'll put you right on. I mean, I'm more than happy to talk about that because you guys were there. And so there's nothing better than live reports. You know, we had live reports January 6th from people who were right there at the Capitol, you know, talking about what was going on. So you can't beat that kind of information. I'll take firsthand over secondhand stuff anytime. But the thing I noticed, and I just put this on a post in Facebook, and in fact, I'll be going to a lot of Facebook stuff. This is where I'm sort of storing my stuff so I don't store it on my computer and have it break up my signal. So again, Gene, if I ever break up, just tell me immediately so I'll be able to hopefully correct the situation. All right. So I wrote something. I said, nowhere in the Florida legislation being considered is any requirement on employers with vaccine mandates to prove the jab works. And this is the thing, you know, like I say, I look for what's there, but I also look for what's not there. And what's not there is any requirement on employers. All the requirements that are coming out of the Florida legislature in terms of the vaccine, the bans on vaccine mandates, which they're really not doing. There's a lot of exceptions. The conditions by which employees can get a vaccine, a religious exemption or a medical exemption, all the burdens on the employees and all the controls on the employers. I mean, they say you can grant them, but they're really not, because they're still leaving a lot of discretion to employers. But there's no burden on employers at all, which tells me that this was written by some kind of business group like a Bloomberg or maybe Florida Chamber of Commerce. I'm not sure who wrote the bills for the legislature, but this has definitely been pre-planned. So I guess they knew the session was coming. They knew they wanted to do something. And, of course, you know, business wants to have – that's where the special interests come in. So this is where citizen legislation can combat special interest legislation. See, before there was no counterbalance to special interest legislation because no one else was writing stuff, you know, for we the people. And so the purpose of Action Radio is to be that counterbalance to the special interest by writing bills for the general welfare. That's us. Okay, not welfare people on welfare. I'm talking about the general welfare as defined in the Constitution as bills that benefit everybody. So what we, the whole purpose of being here is so that we can then take legislation, submit it to the legislature to counter the special interest and the donors and the campaign contributions and all the stuff that the business as usual, and give them a completely different source of bills from we the people as opposed to they the special interest. And that's why I think this is going to be so powerful once everybody kind of gets the hang of how to use it and where to go with it. But Gene, what do you think of that? There's no requirement on employers at all to prove that their vaccine mandate, the vaccine that they're requiring, actually does anything. I find that fascinating.
No, I mean, an employer can ask for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and, vaccine or not, they can do whatever they want to you to tell you what you have to do.
Well, do they though? I mean, that's it's an interesting question.
Yeah, because it's like it's their workplace.
Right.
If they want to tell you to do something, if they tell you to jump, you have to jump.
But
regardless
if
you want to do it or not, it's their place of business.
Right. But do you give up your constitutional rights? You know, in other words, if a business told you not to serve black people, and they say, "Well, that's just our policy," they can't do that, right? I mean, obviously, that was what the whole civil rights law
right.
was about.
They can't do that.
Okay. So there are discriminations at the workplace that they can't make. This is what the whole EEOC, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, right? So you can't discriminate on race, sex, age, pregnancy status. There's a couple of other categories. I would add ideology and gun ownership to those as well. In fact, we're working on that. But you don't give up your rights when you go to work. You know, you don't give up, and this is where people say, well, I'll give you an example. Free speech is always considered. You know, can you jump up on a table and say the Bill of Rights is wonderful, you know, right in the middle of an accounting firm? Well, no. You know, that's kind of stupid. But are you denied your ability to do that on a street corner or in a online or in a pamphlet or in a book or anything else? No. So in other words, whereas your free speech absolute may be blocked at work, you know, because that's their policy, you're not blocked from your free speech. You can still exercise your free speech. It's like kneeling for the national anthem, you know, Colin Kaepernick, right? So he says, well, I have a free speech right to kneel, you know, during the national anthem. Well, no, you don't, because you can kneel during the national anthem anytime, but not when you're in a company uniform, because your right to kneel, you know, when the national anthem is played is not denied, you know, all over the place, but it might be denied in a condition of work. So you're not being denied your right. You're just being, you know, you're sort of being, you're not allowed at a time and a place. And so this is where I draw the line. In other words, as long as you're still able to exercise your right, the fact that you can't exercise it at work isn't a problem, because you can still exercise your right. Now, where that differs is when the employer wants to affect you permanently. And a vaccine is a permanent change to you. Do they have the right to violate the Fourth Amendment and do a seizure of your body for the purposes of permanently changing it? And that's why they don't have a right. They can't do that. And this is the difference between, you know, exercising a right outside work and having work make a policy that denies you your rights all the time. That's the distinction I'm drawing. Does that make sense?
It does. But, you know, I look at a lot of places made to get the flu shot every year in healthcare. Does it work? Uh-huh. I don't think it really works, but, you know, you have to do it. If you want to remain in these certain places, or you have to wear a mask. And in years ago, when they said you have to wear a mask, it's like, shoot, I didn't want to wear a mask all flu season, so I got the flu shot. You know, did I want to do it? No. Would I have done it if I would have worked elsewhere? No. But, you know, it's like that's where I was working.
I
mean,
this
is totally different than the flu shot. Yes. But, I mean, I don't like it. You know, I may be in the same situation, not having a job in a few short weeks, but it's like, you know, I've worked in so many workplaces and some weird rules they put in there that, you know, basically, unless it gets taken to court or challenged, a lot of times, it's what they want. It's their place of work.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've been fired a few times, and not for doing my job, but usually doing my job too well or going above and beyond my job. Or making the boss look bad, you know, or whatever it is. But, yeah, it's never been for incompetence or being unable to do it. It's kind of interesting. The usual
I'd like to know how many people have actually been fired because of, I don't want to say knowing more, but knowing more or having more abilities than the boss, and the boss gets offended. And I've got a friend that his son is going through that. He's got, I can't tell you how many degrees, postdoctorate, from someplace in Oxford, I think, or someplace in Europe.
Really? Oh, wow.
And
very
it's
cool.
Like, it's like he's qualified. You know, people just become intimidated. And I think that's very sad too. But, you know, it's like they can do what they want. They can fire you for any reason.
Well, they can in certain places and then they can't in others. There's still a thing called wrongful termination. And so, you know, employers think they can do anything they want. I mean, we're an at-will state here in Florida, and it's a so-called right-to-work state, which means you don't have to join a union. Okay. Coming from – that's one thing I am a strong proponent of private unions. I was a Teamster for a few years. And so the ability of employees to collectively bargain is the only thing that matches the ability of managers to collectively bargain, because managers don't bargain individually. You don't sit down with a manager and come to an equal agreement. The manager follows the company policy. So they're bargaining collectively. And the only way you can combat that equally or be on an equal footing in a lot of cases is to have a union behind you bargaining collectively for you. So in other words, as companies pay managers to bargain for them, workers pay unions to bargain for them. And they come to an agreement. And in a lot of cases, you get some pretty good contracts. Without those contracts, people are forced to work overtime. They're forced to carry heavier loads than they could. They're forced to do unsafe things, and there's no recourse because, as you say, if you don't do what the company says, you can be fired. So if the company gives you a ridiculous workload because they're trying to, you know, cut costs as much as possible, you know, or they threaten to send your job to China if you don't do more than you're supposed to, or a lot of companies have people working free time. In other words, well, we still need you. We can't pay you for the next, you know, 3 hours of work, but we need you to do it anyway. So if you want to keep your job, you're going to do that. That is so highly illegal, I can't tell you, but you're not going to find that.
But, you know,
you've
never worked in healthcare. That goes on every day of the week, month of the year.
Yeah, y'all need a better union.
You don't, you know, you're supposed to have your breaks. You don't get a break,
mm-hmm.
but you have to take a 30-minute lunch break. Even if you don't take the lunch break, you have to make sure you clock over for 30 minutes. And they say, oh, that's illegal. Yeah, I mean, places have gotten fined, but it's like it goes on every day because of productivity. You talk about, you know, you have unrealistic things. Yes. I mean, now there's certain places for what I do, they want to have your productivity 105%. Are you kidding me? You go to the bathroom and your productivity is going to drop. You know, it's just ridiculous. You do something like be nice to help someone else out and you can't bill for it, right there your productivity drops. It's like, yeah, it's two different worlds, healthcare and then the public. And then, well, actually three different worlds then when you get into working for the government, because the government, you don't even have to be working. I mean, you just have to show up even if you have nothing to do all day. You still get paid.
Yeah, government's is something we have to do. We need to do some civil service reform. Actually, I talked to a fellow talk show host about that at some point. And it didn't come of it. So once again, I think I'll have to do it myself. But as far as healthcare goes, now the Teamsters have a healthcare worker division.
Oh, don't even tell me about that. They're useless.
Oh, okay. Well, they weren't useless for me.
Yeah, they were useless. If it doesn't fit their interest, they don't want to deal with it, and they'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to look around. I'm going to see if there are other healthcare, the possible representatives, because, you know, in terms of healthcare, unions would not be a bad thing. You know, and I'm speaking as a conservative.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking as a conservative who believes in free association, who believes in equal bargaining. So in other words, as an employee, you know, or as an individual against an entire corporation, that's not an equal setting. That's not a place you're going to get an equal contract, because as employees, you're divided and you're treated as individuals, but corporate management, you know, they're going to back their management. Look at these vaccine mandates. The same problem exists there. You know, I don't know any managers that have been fired over this for either, you know, forcing a vaccine mandate or I don't know. Have managers been fired for not enforcing it? I mean, that'd be something interesting to find out. I don't know. I've never seen any stories.
I don't know.
On
everybody I know that they don't care. They do what they're told, you know. So if they're told they need to get people to take the vaccine, and you have to understand, there's a lot of people out there that are pro vaccine. Many people. I got friends that tell me, just take the shot. Just take it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like some people really believe in it.
Bend over.
It's sad,
here it
though,
comes again.
Because once again, last night there were talks about, I don't remember who's been saying this all along, but whoever got the shot is going to be dead within 5 years. Now, do you know that? If that's true or not, I don't know. But
I don't know.
There's just a lot of conspiracy theories going around again, including Trump will be back soon. And
I think the next week or so
is going to be very telling. And I think I think they opened a big can of worms with what's going on in Washington now, what's been discovered the last couple of days, what happened to Bannon. And a lot of that stuff I didn't even know, because I'm, you know, I, how would you say, I'm a political novice, political. I'm like an elementary school learning for politics. And so, you know, that's why
that's
this show is good
on.
Because it teaches me things. And I listen to other shows that teach me about what's, you know, we don't always get into what's going on, but other shows teach me about what's really going on. And, you know, when Bannon got talking the other day, I'm like, what is he talking about and all this? And it wasn't until last night putting two and two together and listening to people that I finally realized what he meant by that. And it's like, now I get it, you know, but it was with the vaccine. You get so many people that, if, you know, just like the trial now in Wisconsin, so many people listen to mainstream media. I mean, they're picketing the courthouse there for saying he's he's innocent, or no, he's guilty. And I'm like, did you even look at any of the stuff? And that prosecutor,
nope.
When he put, did you see that yesterday when he put out that gun?
I've watched much of the trial. Yeah, I've seen a lot of the coverage.
That,
yeah.
That guy, I mean, what he said, and I didn't listen to much because, you know, I'm at work, but what he said about the closing arguments and stuff, and that basically, you know, you don't have a right to defend yourself. I'm sorry, but, I mean, you have a gun. If you take it with you, what, and you shoot someone because they're attacking you? I don't care if it's their
Yeah, that's what he actually said.
I mean, if
that
someone's
you give
a lot
up,
stronger than
yeah.
me and they take a swing at me, a couple of them, and they continue to swing at me, to me, I'd be, like, afraid for my life. But no, this prosecutor makes it sound like, oh, well, you know, sometimes you just have to get hurt before you can, you know, you have to act. But it's like, just because he had a gun didn't mean his intent was to shoot someone. And now the jurors are afraid. I mean, how sad is that, that they're afraid for their own life?
Yeah, no, I understand. I want to, we're definitely going to talk about the Colorado House trial. Probably going to do it after the jury verdict comes out, you know, because at this point they're deliberating and we'll wait and see what happens. But you're absolutely right. You know, what the prosecutor did was, you know, irrational on many levels to say that, you know, if you bring a gun with you, you give up your right to self-defense. No, you're actually exercising it. The idea that you have to take a beating, that you should have the courage to fight your way out. Well, a lot of people have died, you know, trying to fight their way out. They don't teach the police that. The idea that, you know, all the other stupid things that they were saying. But what I want to get back to what's the main issue right now, which is the Florida legislature and what's going on right there right now, because there's some incredible things happening, like I say, both good and bad. And when we talk about, well, I just want to get back to a comment you made earlier. You talked about conspiracy theories about Trump and things like that. I really want to get away from the term conspiracy theory. I'm not trying to tell you what to say, but to me, I wish we could just call them theories. Because the minute you say conspiracy theory, it demonizes the message. And it puts down people that have different ideas. So if you have a theory about Trump coming back, that's different than saying you have a conspiracy theory about Trump coming back. Okay, I have a theory about him coming back simply because he won the election, and that's not a theory. That's actually proven in the Arizona audit, and it looks like it's going to be Michigan, Wisconsin, and a couple of other places too. So is it a theory at this point or is it a fact? Well, it's pretty much a fact. That was the report in Arizona. So it's actually a fact now that you know, the results were cheated, and they're just a matter of who's going to take care of that. But the idea of conspiracy theory, it demonizes. And I got after Shelby for this too. It's like you detract from the argument, or that's like saying, you know, well, most people feel this way. Well, that's nice, but that's not based on fact, and I don't deal in feelings so much. And the reason I don't cover stories, you know, like I say, if you want news sources, there's a lot of places where you can go to talk about the news or hear the news. I don't do that.
Right.
A lot of times I'll wait 3, 4, 5 days on a story so that I can analyze it and see what's going on, because I come back with the backstory, the things that you don't hear about. You know, the questions that weren't asked. For example, as everybody's up to the minute reporting, you know, what's coming, which bills are being talked about in the Florida State Legislature today, they're not talking about what they're not talking about, which is the fact that employers have no responsibility. And then I want to go over. So let me turn to this right now. I've got an article here from WEAR-TV Channel 3. That's our local folks around here, taken from the Capitol News Service from yesterday, November 16th. And it says that Florida lawmakers are moving quickly to ban vaccine and mask mandates for employees and students. Well, yes and no. They are expected to wrap up their 5-day session in just 3 days. Some of the most heated debate is over a 20-year-old law that has never been used. That's an interesting point, because just because it has been used doesn't mean it can't. Now, there are emergency laws that are on the books. Just, you know, a lot of people end up in gulags in this country. You know, so those are the laws that you can get rid of. If it's a bad law, it doesn't matter that it hasn't been used. You still need to get rid of it. And that's what they're trying to do here. Then they said, following the attacks at Twin Towers, Florida lawmakers met in a special session like the one this week and approved the bill giving the Surgeon General the power to force people to be vaccinated. And that's one of the biggest bones of contention. And I'll tell you why they're screwing up. In fact, this article says so too. State Senator Aaron Bean is leading the charge to repeal the vaccine authority. He painted a graphic picture of what the future could look like if it remains on the books. He says, quote, that picture will be there down the road somewhere in Florida of somebody being held down against their will and having a vaccine or whatever injected into their person. Yeah, because law enforcement's in this too. This provision is one of the ones I got rid of, that law enforcement can be empowered to do anything the Surgeon General or the Public Health Director in Florida says. Okay. So if the public health director or the surgeon general of Florida says, you know, tie people down, strap them to a gurney, use law enforcement, bring in the SWAT teams, break their door down at 3 a.m, give them a vaccine and send them on their way. That's illegal under this law because by any means necessary means by any means necessary. Well, and yet that's still, go ahead.
This has nothing to do with the bill. I mean, now as it is, but like that was done after 9/11. Why would they need to why would they put that in there at that time about possible mandated vaccines?
Probably because of the anthrax scare and the biological warfare.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's from my guess. Okay. And as it turned out, the anthrax vaccine had a chemical called squalene, which is an adjuvant, which basically makes it more powerful. It's like an octane booster. Okay. It makes it more powerful in a cheap way. And squalene, they believe, is responsible for Gulf War syndrome. Okay. So they're making all the same mistakes with the COVID shots that they made with the Gulf War anthrax shots. And they're using the military to do it. So exactly the same thing's going to happen. You know, you're going to have huge amounts of military people that are going to be injured. They're going to be incapacitated. They're going to be killed, you know, by this vaccine to whatever percentages, you know, are going to have. And it's horrible. It's a horrible tragedy. But what makes it a worse tragedy is that we've been through this before. You know, we went through this with Agent Orange in Vietnam, you know, chemicals that killed a whole lot of people. And cancers after the war for decades, all right? We went through this with the anthrax vaccine. We're going to go through it again with the COVID vaccine. All of these, the military, because they don't have the same rights. They sign away their rights when they join the military. I mean, you know, that's right. I mean, they can order you to basically they can order you to your death. That's what you're saying when you join the military. And God bless people for doing so. That's the reality. And so that's the trade-off. So yes, you're serving, but you're serving. You know, and you still have certain rights. You don't have to obey an unlawful order. But, of course, the government says that all their orders are lawful. So where do you go from there? Yeah. Anyway, that's the article. It says opponents argue that even though the power has never been used, it may be needed in the future. Well, that's another problem. You know, you don't legislate just in case. You don't have laws in the books that you might want to use sometime in the future, maybe. Okay. That's as bad as prior restraint. That's as bad as red flag laws, you know, which say, well, we better take your guns now because you might do something wrong later. We better have the ability to tie people to gurneys, strap them down, bring in the SWAT teams and inject them with whatever we please because we might need that sometime in the future. That's bad legislation. That's not how it's supposed to work. Laws are supposed to be current and they're supposed to be lawful and they're supposed to be constitutional and they're supposed to protect individual rights. They are not supposed to be there just in case. Anyway. Comment on that.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Let me continue on. It says the idea is to protect the public, and that's State Senator Aubrey Gibson. Well, they can say they're protecting the public with anything they want. Well, we better get all the guns off the street, in other words, out of people's homes, because that'll protect the public. You know, we better, you know, clear the freeways of cars because somebody might drive drunk. We're protecting the public. You better close the banks because, you know, people rob banks, and we better protect people from being bank robbed. You know, of course, then all the depositors gets kicked out too. So the idea that you're protecting the public, that's the old Ben Franklin argument, freedom versus safety. If you give up your freedom to get safety, you lose both freedom and safety because the government then tells you how you're being protected. And the government idea of protection is absolute control and gulags and restrictions and propaganda and government schools and everything else like that. We know how the government protects people. And then the activists, the good folks, the folks we talked to yesterday in the bus ride up, testified the law didn't go far enough. It says it's still in other places, said Boca Raton resident Nikki Celso. Oh, maybe that's not. Well, let me continue reading. Senator Jason Pizzo recounted George Washington once ordered his troops vaccinated. Oh, yeah, so activists. All right, these are the other. All right, I misspoke. These are the activists wanting more restrictions on the public, more vaccine mandates. Okay, you know, and you comparing George Washington's medical technology, you know, to today, it's kind of a stupid comparison. All right, so the Senate Appropriations Committee approved the bill, and I'm going to get into what the bill is in a little bit here on party lines. And so there's four bills. There's four bills that are coming in the legislature right now. There is the general, you know, all-encompassing bill. There is the bill on public records. There is another one, let me see, on the state emergency plan. And then there's the bill that gets rid of the vaccine mandate. So what they're talking about here is the ability of the state to force you to get a vaccine by any means necessary. That's what they're taking out. Now, here's the cool guy. Senator Jeff Brandes, who I'm going to try and talk to after the show. And that's Brandes. Senator Jeff Brandes voted yes, in other words, to stop that power of the state to vaccinate you by any means necessary. But he argued as long as the word, quote, treatment is still in the law, the bill is useless. And this is exactly the point I was making yesterday, which is why I want to talk to him. he's quoted as saying it does only that it takes out the word vaccine, but it doesn't actually prevent them from forcing a treatment upon somebody. That's his Brandis. Because the Surgeon General reports directly to the governor, some lawmakers believe that's enough control over what treatments may or may not be ordered. A final vote is expected Wednesday, that's today, and since the bill is part of the governor's call, there's little doubt he will sign it. So he's going to sign a bill that only takes out the word vaccinate or vaccine in four places, but leaves all the other dangerous authority in place. And all anybody has to do is say, well, the treatment is a vaccine. You know, any governor, any surgeon general in the future that says your treatment is a vaccine. And we can do that because the law still says by any means necessary. So that's why we have to change so many more parts of this law to prevent them from doing that kind of thing. And besides, if the vaccine is, you know, successful and safe, people are going to take it anyway. This is the part that people forget. These things will be done anyway. Go ahead.
Who put this law out or this bill out?
It's funny you should say that. Well, let's go right to it. Let me see here now. I got the general bill. I think it's all right. I've got Senator Bean and I think Andrade, my legislator, put this out. And it's an act relating to vaccinations during public health emergencies. All right. So it amends the Florida Statute 381.00315. That's the one that I heavily amended. But these guys, it's Andrade in the House and Senator Bean in the Senate. So there's basically four bills that the legislature is going to be considering. And they've paired. So in other words, the House and the Senate bill are exactly the same. So they've paired these four bills. So there's actually eight. But because the Senate and the House versions of each one are the same, it doesn't matter which one I talk about. Senate happens to have an easier form to read. But they don't amend anything except they take out the vaccination in four places. It says ordering – here's the section. So this would be for all you bill nerds. This would be 381.00315, section 1, paragraph 4. It says ordering an individual to be examined, tested, vaccinated, treated, isolated, or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality and present a severe danger to public health. Okay. All they did was take out the word vaccinated. So it still says ordering an individual to be examined, tested, treated, isolated, or quarantined for communicable diseases that have a significant morbidity or mortality and present a severe danger to public health. Well, what's a severe danger to public health? I mean, Dr. Fascist said that COVID, you know, means we have to lock down and mask and close schools and close beaches and close everything. And none of that was true. They completely overblew it and made something that had a less than 1% mortality rate into some, you know, which is less than the flu every year, into this massive pandemic purely by hoax. So you can't trust the public health people to do it because that's what happens when they do it. And what is significant morbidity? Morbidity means something that's a life risk factor, right? Jean, what's morbidity? Or is it something that can kill you?
You know, dying. But the thing is with that, how many people are dying when getting the vaccine? So my thinking would be, how many people are you saving versus how many people are you hurting? And now I've got another question about this bill. They can't amend it before they vote on it? This is it?
No, this is amended. This is the amendment. This is what they're voting on, yeah. So in other words, the process is the legislator files the bill. So Andrade filed it in the House and what was this guy in the Senate? Bean filed it in the Senate. They filed the same bill basically. Or they joined them together or they merged them in committee and the committees reported it out. And today they're going to debate it and vote on the final bill.
I would call them and say no. And then I would get on the phone and call DeSantis. I mean, to me, he's just,
I don't
think he's part of it, but he is because it's like they're not getting to the crux of the matter. It's all for show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I recommend that our bills be substituted for their bills. My two bills for their four. Because my two bills, Action Radio's two bills, I shouldn't say my, kind of arrogant, but our Action Radio bills are more comprehensive, more protecting of the individual. They take more things into consideration that the legislature and the executive under public health can abuse. We've done more, far more comprehensively. You know, I read the bill yesterday. Remember, like the folks on the way were really impressed. You know, so that was, you know, I think it was Shannon we were talking to, you know, was impressed. That was pretty decent language, you know, that's in our bill. So what the best thing I would recommend is people read our bill at writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. Hold on. Let me finish the thing. So writeyourlaws.com, you go to legislation on the menu bar. And then the next item down below, or a couple items below that, is citizen bill ideas. And that's where you're going to find our two bills, one on parental rights, which really makes it parental, actually makes rights out of the parental rights bill. And the second one amends public health. And those two bills you want to send to your legislator, so your House member, your Senate member, and the governor. And I would say especially the governor, because he'll have the time to think about signing these after the special session ends, maybe today. I mean, that's how these things are going. Gene, now go ahead, please.
No, but even if the governor gets it, he can't, mm-hmm. His choice is either to veto their bill. I mean, he can't do anything about your bill. It's too late.
Well, for this session,
right?
But the governor can introduce our bills as an amendment in the next session. See, laws can always be amended. They can be amended in special session. They can be amended in regular session. Laws are amended all the time. Just because you pass a law, it's only as good as it is until the next time they pass a law or pass an amendment to it. Okay, so these things are constantly in flux. So this is why, we get small victories, we get part of our bill passed, we get it considered, we get it known. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're constantly making inroads. So this bill, which only takes out the word vaccinated five times, making it effectively useless because they leave in all the other authority, if they pass that, that's a start. But that's not the end.
Okay, so that means the $1 trillion bill that was passed last week, if that ever does get through to the Senate and they pass it, then when another Senate takes over, they can negate it?
Yep. They can cut all the spending. Absolutely.
Oh, I was told they couldn't change it once it's there. Okay.
Well, whoever said that was lying to you. It was probably
good,
a Democrat.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. And people need to understand this. This is part of our education process here at Action Radio. Okay. So anything can be amended. Any bill can be. The only thing, even the Constitution can be amended, but it's a very difficult process, and rightly so.
Right.
Supreme Court. Opinions can be overturned by Congress. Most people don't know that because Congress can change the law. They can overrule them. In fact, Congress can recall any Supreme Court justice for bad behavior. Most people don't know that. They think it's a lifetime appointment. The courts think that they can use judicial review to create things like Roe v. Wade, and that's BS too. So there's a lot of misconceptions out there. But spending, and a lot of the spending isn't going to be fully spent for maybe 10 years on the stimulus bill. But the next Congress can completely erase it. In fact, just as, let's say President Trump comes back in 2024, he can literally erase everything Biden did, just like he erased everything Obama did by executive order. He reversed them all. Okay.
I'm hoping he's back by 2021.
That'd be nice.
He's still got a couple months.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's his term. Now, of course, my plan... my plan is he comes back January 21st of 2023. Okay. So because then he'd serve less than 2 years of a term. So that means he can run again. So if he comes back, this hasn't been really talked about, but you give it about 6 months to a year. It's going to come out. I think Trump already knows this, but think about it.
I think he's going to be back way before then.
Well, that's fine. But he still had so much of his term stolen, but
he
can reverse. If he comes back right away, he can reverse most of the damage that's been done. And that would infuriate the left. And he might be able to do so much good in the 2.5 years of his term that was stolen. He may not want to run in 2024, even if he could, if he gets in 2023. Well, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Anyway, but I just want to let you know, people, on this particular bill, it's really bad. And then they have another Section A of this bill, examination, testing, vaccination, the word they took out, or treatment may be performed by any qualified person authorized by the state health officer. Well, what the hell does that mean? Does that mean you can go to Walmart?
CVS, and I can't. Yeah. I've gone to CVS a lot of times for different different things, like work-related things or stuff, and use their physician assistants and stuff. And I tell you, I would go there in a heartbeat compared to some of the hospitals I've been involved in.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
I mean, not that they're not qualified in the hospitals, but the thing is, in the hospitals, a lot of times they don't have the time to really do thorough things because they're so booked. They have so many people waiting, and you have to wait so long to be seen. I mean, obviously, if you're having a heart attack, you're not going to go to there. But they have to have qualified people doing that job because of regulations.
Yeah,
and
no, it makes
their life is, I mean, their license is on the line. If they see someone and they tell you something and it goes bad, well, then they're going to get sued, and things happen all the time. But, I'm just saying that if they think you need to go to the hospital, they will tell you. And I've been with people where they said, you need to go to the hospital. But I've also been with people when they've been in a regular doctor's office and the doctor says, you need to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be a good thing.
it used to be
a place, you know, and after open heart surgery, I went to the hospital because I was suffocating on my own foot because they screwed up with, I believe, the blood thinners. You know, so the hospital actually saved my life as well as almost costing me my life. So, you know, I got kind of mixed feelings about hospitals. You know, I think they did a good thing with my open heart surgery. I think they did a great job of that, you know, because I just went to the doctor yesterday. You know, clean bill of health, no heart murmur. You know, I'm in great shape. I'm still losing weight, so that's the only thing I really have to work on. And all my health indexes are getting better. So, you know, good Lord willing, I'll be around for a while to do this job. But it's really nice to you know, so you take self-control and you do that. So that's good to hear. But you know, when I needed open heart surgery, you know, going to the hospital was actually a good thing. You know, nowadays you can't be sure of that because they're so corrupt. They're so involved in money. We heard from Patty Burke yesterday, who was on the bus on the way to Tallahassee. I can't mention her name. She's head of Gulf Coast Patriots. Guess what group we're going to do a lot of work with from now on is Gulf Coast Patriots. But anyway, so she was talking. What was she talking about? Where was I going with this? Oh, now I've totally forgotten. Anyway, point being that where was I going? I hate when I get a mind blank. So this is the problem when you think of like 15 topics at once. Anyway, so they're doing some great work, and we shall I'll have to think about where I was. I want to get back to the bill here. So you know, this is where we really did instant replay. Where were you going, Greg? I'm sure it'll come to me in a second here. All right. So back to this. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and they needed to put something in there about treatment in the hospital. I know they're not medical people.
That's what you're talking about, right.
Mm-hmm. But I read the article yesterday that the kindergarten teacher from Florida, that the husband fought for her to have ivermectin and the hospital refuses, she did die. And I don't know if he ever got it, that she could try it or not. I don't know. But
where
the thing is, I just think it's sad that because of why aren't hospitals using it? Why aren't they trying it? Why are they doing remdesivir and ventilators?
Oh, that's right.
When they know that's causing more harm.
Now I remember where I was going with this.
Okay.
She was talking about, Patty was talking about the Center for Medicaid and Medicare systems,
right.
You know, the people that
mm-hmm.
fund, that pay for the Medicare stuff. And what she was saying was that they get a 20% bonus for using remdesivir. So they're actually paying people to kill people because remdesivir
right.
causes kidney failure. All right. So there's the, so when the profits got in the way of health, I mean, it used to be, you know, doctors used to run hospitals, you know, just like pilots used to run airlines and truckers used to run trucking companies. I mean, you worked your way up and, you know, you became the boss. Now most of these things are run by bean counters. You know, you look at most of the – well, you tell me. You're in the health profession. Most of the people that run health corporations, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living, you know, urgent cares, are they in fact doctors or are they usually bean counters, corporate people, accountants, investment people?
Yeah, no, they're usually business, that type of people. I mean, you get some doctors, not, I mean, they have their own mm-hmm. medical doctor in charge of the medical as far as certain things, but it's sure not budget usual. You know what I mean? I'm talking hospital budget. That's usually some business or financial person that they don't know medicine. And so that's where the problem lies because they just look at ways to cut costs, ways to whatever. And that is so not right, you know, if they do get that. But I'm sure just like if they get more, they get all that money per person when they die of COVID or not even die. They just get treated of COVID, you know, so that's horrible. But I found out something the other day, what I do and what I do as a therapist, I was told, and I don't know if this is true, but this is what someone told me. Some of the people like my supervisors, I got different ones depending where I'm at, what building. Mm-hmm. And some of them really push groups and seeing more than one or seeing two people at a time, more than one person at a time. And I was told last week that someone heard, now this is all hearsay, but they heard that the people like our supervisors that are pushing more groups and pushing more different things, they actually get a bonus from our company if they have more of that going on.
More billable hours.
And how sad is
like
that?
Like lawyers.
Yeah.
No,
exactly. So what it is, you know, we're seeing more people in a shorter period of time. We're not getting paid more, but they're getting paid more.
Yeah.
You know, there, and you know, and I'm like, but that's how it is. That's how healthcare is. I get it, because I've worked in places where, no, you can't get a raise. And you talk about healthcare, the company I'm with, just companies last year during COVID, when they were working during COVID, mm-hmm. those employees had to take a 3% pay decrease.
What?
And then you talk about the government. Does the government
take
ever take
less money
a pay decrease
for your job?
That's heck no.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too bad you're working through COVID, but hey, you know what? You're going to see 3% less in your pay. And we're not like the government where you get a cost mm-hmm. of living increase every year. Heck no.
Yeah.
You may get a 5 cents an hour raise every year.
Which is interesting.
That's
because
that.
If you're on welfare, every kid you get more money. Whereas I would hold welfare payments, you know, for a child or children, the same. You get the same payment, whether one kid or six kids. If you had six kids, that's on you. There's no personal responsibility, but we can talk about that later. Let me, I think you're absolutely right, though, that healthcare we need to do some more investigations of healthcare. Like I say, don't mention your company, and we'll unless we need to, you know. But at some point, we need to start talking about some of these companies and what they're doing. I've got an article here on Ascension, which is the largest private Catholic nonprofit health system that has a huge private equity account. So, you know, when you talk about business, the business end of health, that's something we need to do some serious exploration on. I want to read this one more part. This is part B. This is the one that really gets people. It says here, let me get part A first. It says examination, testing, vaccination, the word they took out, or treatment may be performed by any qualified person. Okay, I already said that. Section B, if the individual poses a danger to the public health, of course that can mean anything, the state health officer may subject the individual to isolation or quarantine. If there is no practical method to isolate or quarantine the individual, I'm not sure how that would happen, he says the state health officer may use any means necessary to vaccinate or treat the individual. And the only thing they did was take out the word vaccinate or. So it still says the state health officer may use any means necessary to treat the individual. So that's the part they're leaving in the law. I want people to understand they're leaving the most dangerous part still in there. Yes, they took out the word vaccinate, but as Senator Brandis and I recognize, and Gene knows, and most other people recognize as soon as you hear about it, treating an individual could include vaccinating them. And by any means necessary literally means strapping you down with a SWAT team with a gun in your face, an injection in your arm, and saying, we're doing this for the public health. That's insane. Besides, if it was that worthwhile, people would do it voluntarily. And this is the part that no one's talking about. So, Gene, what do you think? I mean,
no.
If it was a good vaccine, most people would just lie. If it was really good, I'd lie.
They would do it. We would do it. If it worked, yeah. We would do it. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's interesting because uh-huh. I even heard last night ICD-10 codes are what healthcare you get. You go in the hospital, you get a diagnosis. Like let's say you had a heart surgery, you had a CABG. That's a certain ICD-10 code. Okay.
Okay. Right.
They made one now for anti-vaxxers.
What?
So what does that tell you? That tells you. Now I can't say for sure, but that tells me that if you get someone, you go to the hospital. And you diagnose, well, you get that on your chart. Do you think they're going to really do a whole lot to help you? No.
Nope. No, they're not. Let me, I went over this section, the one that was really onerous here, talking about isolation and testing. And I rewrote it. So the original one said, let me just get this up here, ordering an individual to be examined, tested, vaccinated, treated, isolated, or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My version is ordering an individual to, I left some of the language, ordering an individual to be examined, tested, isolated, or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality. That's what the section's called, section four. So I wrote, individuals who are unable or unwilling to be examined or tested for reasons of health, religion, or conscience, which cannot be honored or delayed, and that's the part I added, which cannot be honored or delayed. And I'm still thinking about that language because the fact that you have, why you can't be tested for reasons of health, religion, or conscience, I'm not sure. You should be able to get a religious exemption to a treatment, but for testing? If you've got a communicable disease, I think, I can see where they would want to test you for it. So here's what I wrote. I want to see what you think of this language. unable or unwilling to be examined or tested for reasons of health, religion, or conscience, which cannot be honored or delayed, may be subjected to isolation or quarantine if, and here's the key part, if they show positive symptoms of a lethal communicable disease before a licensed physician, who will certify as such. If subsequent testing proves negative or if symptoms disappear, they shall not be inconvenienced further. So the point is, the state only has the power to isolate or quarantine if the person has demonstrated symptoms before a physician. Is that a decent enough qualification as opposed to whatever might pose a danger to public health, leaving it to the arbitrary nature of the public health folks?
No, I like that, yeah.
Okay. All right. And then I left the part in examination, testing, or treatment after receiving informed consent. Oh, here's why I changed that next part, that part A that I read earlier. Part A, examination, testing, vaccination, or treatment may be performed by any qualified person authorized by the state. I changed that to examination, testing, or treatment after receiving informed consent, which I do define earlier in great detail, without coercion or influence on the individual, may be performed by any qualified person. So I included an informed consent clause into that one. That section B, the one that was the horrible one, by any means necessary, I just repeal that. I just get rid of it. There's nothing redeemable about that that particular section. Then I added a C. Any order of the state health officer given to effectuate this paragraph given to a law enforcement officer under Section 381.0012, as amended by my bill, shall be subject to all federal and state constitutional and individual rights, including especially due process. So in other words, law enforcement can't do whatever they're ordered to do. They can't walk in and strap you to a gurney and put an AR-15 in your nose and make you get a shot, because you still have all your constitutional and individual rights, especially due process. Due process being you got to be proven that you're sick. There are certain measures they have to take. Has to be demonstrated before a physician. You still have your individual rights. And then if you have a communicable disease, if you refuse to be isolated or quarantined, there still has to be a provision for taking people. Because some people, Typhoid Mary. You don't want Typhoid Marys running around, but you want to have the healthy people have every means possible to get away from government and unnecessary health treatments. But the people that are genuinely sick, that have the symptoms, that have a communicable disease, you know those are some of the folks the state still has to have recourse to be able to go after them. In other words, it'd be like making laws so vague that the criminals run free. Well, that doesn't make any sense. So you want to protect the honest people, but still be able to do something with the criminals. You want to be able to protect the healthy people without government regulation or treatments, but still be able to go after someone that does have a demonstrated communicable disease. That's what I tried to do in this bill. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. I know it's confusing. You have to read it. And for most people, I don't expect you to get it when I say it here. You're better off reading it, because I think that makes more sense. All right, let's take a break here. I got like three more bills, and one of them is big. And so I'm going to play a little Santa Rosa Volunteers, take a couple minutes here, and then I want to come back. And Gene, did you have any comments on anything so far? I want to make sure we got
No, not with what you covered, no.
Okay. So I got there's three more bills before the Florida State Legislature. I think we've dismissed their most important bill as a total waste. And that our bills are better, and that if people want to submit them to their legislator and to the governor, and especially for the upcoming regular session, which starts in January, we can fix this bad legislation now by simply putting better legislation in next time. Okay, let me find my correct thing. Here it is, and I'll be right back in a few minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In Federalist Paper number 7, Alexander Hamilton once again beats the same dead horse he trotted out in his first Federalist Paper, that the Constitution has to be ratified or the states will end up divided in three or so groups, or will cause other nations to invade us. Upping the ante now, he claims that we will all be at war with ourselves in this paper, and once again the cure is to ratify the Constitution. Ironic again that the Constitution was in full force when the states did divide, but in a unified way against the federal government created by the Constitution, and not in the three or four separate confederacies as argued by Hamilton and the Federalists, but one confederacy of states who were run by the Democrat Party. be careful what you wish for. Hamilton begins with this question. It is sometimes asked, with an air of seeming triumph, what inducements could the states have, if disunited, to make war upon each other? This is a preposterous question, given that the states were united under the Articles of the Confederacy, and that no states were at war or were, to my knowledge, trying to take each other's territory. So Hamilton asks a question that requires an assumption that doesn't exist. Therefore, a legitimate answer cannot be given. But that's not the point of the question. The point is to plant in your brain that if the states became disunited, what would save the Union? And the only answer Hamilton wants you to consider is the new Constitution. Hamilton also says, "We have a vast tract of unsettled territory within the boundaries of the United States. There are still discordant and undecided claims between several of them, and the dissolution of the Union would lay a foundation for similar claims between them all." Well, yes, the dissolution of the Union would cause territorial disputes, but to use that as a reason to ratify the Constitution, you have to believe two things. One, that there is going to be a dissolution of the Union under the Articles of Confederation, and two, that there will be no dissolution of the Union nor any territorial disputes if the Constitution is ratified. Both of those are impossible to argue as connected or even probable individually. Therefore, the argument for the Constitution from the Federalists is based solely on their fertile imagination of what they think will scare the people who would vote to ratify the Constitution the most. If this is in fact the case, then the Constitution was argued from a huge pyramid of ever-increasing lies designed to channel all thinking to a predetermined outcome without real examination, because the building block evidence and arguments of the Federalists crumble at the slightest scrutiny. They knew that, but argued it that way anyway. Kind of sounds like the government position on COVID since early 2020. Hamilton concludes, "From the view they have exhibited of this part of the subject, this conclusion is to be drawn, that America, if not connected at all, or only by the feeble tie of a simple league, offensive and defensive, would, by the operation of such jarring alliances, be gradually entangled in all the pernicious labyrinths of European politics and wars, and by the destructive contentions of the parts into which she was divided, would be likely to become a prey to the artifices and machinations of powers equally the enemies of all of them. Divide and conquer must be the motto of every nation that either hates or fears us." At the end of this Federalist paper, Alexander Hamilton has tied together every preposterous proposition he is making with the hope that enough bogus fears will be grouped together, and the simple weight of numbers of so many ridiculous assumptions will somehow, as a group, give them credibility. Divide and conquer. I wonder if he would have used race like it's used today, if he could. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. Okay, we are back, and Jane, our producer, is here, and we're anticipating David Jones of Santa Rosa Volunteers joining us a little bit. I'm not sure if he was at the rally or not. Be interested to find out. I know the Citizens for Medical Freedom folks were there, the Gulf Coast Patriots were there, various other groups, I'm sure, you know, from all over the state. I've been reading articles that a whole lot of folks went up to this this rally. I've been looking for a video of it. I was looking last night, Rumble and YouTube. I'm curious to see the speakers and what they did and what actually got accomplished. My guess is that the legislature has already decided what they're going to do, that they're going to take these four bills, that we're going over now, and that it really doesn't matter a whole lot what other people think. That's what they're going to vote through. And we've already, I think, pretty much determined that first bill that only takes out the word vaccinated really doesn't do anything, because treatment can be the Surgeon General or the public health officer can name vaccination as a treatment, and we're right back where we started. Senator Brandis was absolutely right in that description. So there's three other bills that are before the legislature. Again, there's a House version and there's a Senate version today. One of the ones, let's see if I can get this here. This is one of the more interesting ones in terms of, well, it's short, but it's talking about an act relating to the Florida Occupational Safety and Health State Plan. So we were a little confused yesterday, and I was thinking that they were actually creating a Florida OSHA. That's what occupational safety and health is, right? They're not. They're not creating OSHA. We already have an OSHA, a Florida State Department of Occupational Health, Safety and Health. What we don't have is a brand new plan. So the legislature, when in doubt, create a study, create a plan, create something new. So they don't actually fix the old stuff. They just keep piling it on. And so this is why your laws are so cumbersome. This is why there's so much stuff that may not make much sense. It's because they don't take the old stuff out. They put a whole bunch of new stuff in. Now, you might be asking, we'll do a Rush Limbaugh. But Greg, you're creating new laws too. Well, yeah, I am. But so much of what we do here negates so much of other law that can be taken out because it's obsolete. And so that's why... So it's as important to get rid of things as it is to put new stuff in. So this new bill, this state plan, requires the executive officer of the Office of the Governor to develop a proposal for a state plan to assert state jurisdiction over occupational safety and health issues for government and private employees. Well, as you know, we discovered a bill, and I don't think it's still here. I'm going to look for it. But, Gene, do you remember that section where we said – maybe I didn't bring it up on the show, but I certainly posted on Facebook to various groups, that one person has a bill that says that the state of Florida cannot touch ETS, an emergency temporary standard by OSHA in their new state plan. And so what it basically said was the state cannot block an OSHA mandate, in other words, the vaccine mandate, while they have a law to block the vaccine mandate. Okay, so they got two problems here. And I'm going to see if it's in this bill. We got Dave on the line. I'm going to get to him in just a second here. But did we talk about that on the show, Gene, or is that something that I post? I'm pretty sure I only post it.
I think you only posted it. I don't remember hearing it.
Okay, so there is one of the – now, I want to find out, because that bill may have been taken out. So they had eight bills yesterday. They got four today. So they got rid of four of them. Hopefully they got rid of that one. And hopefully they took out the bills that had climate change – and money for housing and all that other crap. In fact, I'll take a look at this. Well, I'm going to make Dave's line live. He might as well join us for a little bit of this. And let's go over this bill. So this is, I'm not sure what section it is because they're sort of a little sparse in their information here. But it says, Section 1, it is the intent of the legislature to provide for the establishment of the Florida Occupational Safety and Health State Plan. Legislature finds that such a plan enhances occupational safety and health. Well, that seems like a no-brainer. Yada, 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 yada. And it's used in, okay, let's see if I can pass the definitions. The executive office of the governor shall develop a proposal for a state plan. So they're actually making a law to make a proposal for a plan. Excuse me, but I find that funny. And then it goes Division of Risk Management and the Division of Workers' Compensation on report January 17th, timelines for the completion of the proposal. Oh, here's the good part, all right? For the fiscal year 2021 to 2022, The non-recurring sum of $1 million is appropriated to the Executive Office of the Governor from the General Revenue Fund for the purpose of implementing the proposal to the law to create a proposal to create a policy. Dave, are you with me on this?
Yeah, it's absolutely nonsensical. But this is how our government works now. This is how they think they have to do things in order to get anything accomplished. Which is why we're as fiscally irresponsible in the situation we're in, as well as we don't ever get anything accomplished.
Yeah. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the bills that I have put forward. The Parental Bill of Rights, which actually is a bill of rights and not a bill of rights that are authorized by law, as is currently the situation. And the other one being the public health laws, which instead of giving the state ultimate power to do anything they want by any means necessary, actually makes them subordinate to our constitutional individual rights and due process. And have you had a chance to look at those at all? I mean, I know you're busy, so I don't expect you to, but just in case.
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
Okay. I'm going to turn you into a bill nerd like me. You go, oh, I can't wait to read legislation. Man, this is going to be fun. You know, there are very few people that actually find this fun. I'm probably, you know, one of the very few, but that's why I do this here. Well, let's get on to you. We'll take a break from some of the other stuff. What's happening with Santa Rosa Volunteers? Dave is a co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers. You might want to explain them briefly and any what's going on in Santa Rosa Hospital. Were you at the rally yesterday? Did you go up?
No. I had to stay here, but, you know, we had representatives down there, Mike and Cindy. We're down there. They took a bus. Were you part of that group?
No, actually, the bus called us. I was still on the air. But we broke some new ground here at Action Radio with live reports. So we had a woman named Shannon called in from the bus. Patty Burke called in from Gulf Coast Patriots. She called us. I think they were passing a phone around because I could hear people in the background. But, yeah, we actually had a lot. Listen to yesterday's show. It would be – I'm trying to think. It was the third hour or the second hour. Gene, when did they call in? Do you remember? Yesterday was a busy day. We had our regular reporters. We had like eight people on the line at one point.
I think it was the second into the third hour. They were on the line for a while, yeah, because not all the reporters talked.
Yeah, we totally swamped. We got a bit of Josie's report. That's right. So it would have been the second hour. Josie on the Latino report. And then, unfortunately, Paulette, who does, you know, Foods That Kill You. And we're going to pick a new name for that. Her report got squashed because we had so many folks calling in. But I just felt it was more important to catch the live report. So we actually had him on the bus for about half three quarters of an hour, you know, at various times, you know, calling in. The reporters were talking to us. Pianchi was on the line from, I think, Missouri. And we had some other folks. We had Lita from Texas. So we had some pretty good coverage yesterday. But I love the live report. So, they called in on the way up. And we're going to hear from Cindy tomorrow, the Medical Freedom Report, Cindy Cagle. And we'll see what happened at the rally. But, yeah. So what's going on in your world? What's happening here?
So tomorrow we're going to be at the county commissioner's meeting at 8:30 in the morning. And they made a really bad decision. So there was a letter that I put forward that I wanted them to endorse and then send to the Santa Rosa Medical Center, formally requesting that they stop their vaccine mandate. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've been trying to get this put on the agenda for roughly 2 months, and it hasn't made it there yet. So it finally made it, and I didn't catch it, and nobody was there because we were all at the medical rally, and because that was the second day. And I was actually at the city council meeting making sure that the incumbent city council member was a good conservative and not one of the two.
Now that was really important. Listen, I was at the rally because I spoke there. You know, I was at the previous one because I was curious. But, that was a fabulous rally, and we have some amazing contacts from that. And so I'm going to be on some pretty cool shows here in the next little bit. So that was well worth going. But thank you for doing what you do to get a decent person on the city council, you know, and not have our town be destroyed. And if you need more evidence for anything that you're doing with the county commissioner or city council as far as, you know, keeping our historic district historic, I've got videos, and I got a show from Chuck Barron, who represents – he started an organization called Strong Towns, and Strong Towns talked about walkable districts and keeping traffic limited and not having four-lane, you know, super highways through your historic districts because they literally destroy them. And that's proven over and over again. It's the quickest way to get rid of stuff. So any information you need on that, let me know, and I can send you the shows and the information. But, yeah, so city council, how'd that go? That worked out well?
Yeah, the city council worked out well. We got accomplished what we wanted to over there, so we're all good on that front. Problem was is the county commissioners, because nobody showed up, they took the opportunity and raked James Calkins over the coals because he is my district representative, and he's the one that put it forward for us, stating that it was a government overreach to fight mandates, and they openly disagreed with Governor DeSantis and mocked the people who are fighting these mandates. So tomorrow morning is the very first meeting since then, and they're going to get the wonderful opportunity of hearing my opinion of them. It's so bad to the point where the Pensacola News Journal, we all know the far left.
The Partial News Journal, the one that doesn't report that Action Radio exists? Yeah, I know them.
They So they've done an article almost every day. Channel 3, I don't remember which newspaper it was, but there was another newspaper where it was front page, you know, county commissioners, you know, make correct decision. I don't even remember what the heck it were, but they, when you get too far left organizations like that praising your decisions, you're not making good decisions.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then Santa Rosa Hospital, of course, got a hold of the CEO, rather, got a hold of each individual commissioner and fed them a bunch of lies. They don't have a vaccine mandate. They didn't deny anybody's religious exemption, yada, yada, yada. Even though I've shown these county commissioners the email chain and the documentation and the proof of it, some CEO waves a magic wand. These are not the droids you're looking for type of situation. And all of a sudden, we're a bunch of liars. So it was implied that I was lying and my wife was lying. And even though we're the ones that have the documents and the evidence of the information. And, of course, yesterday, the hospital puts out their new vaccine policy, which is a full-blown vaccine mandate. You have to have your first shot by December 4th, and you have to have your second by November 4th. And, of course, they're blaming the federal policies and
but there is no federal policy. There is, we talked about this Monday. There is no federal. The Fifth Circuit has stopped it. In fact, they've actually, let me give you the language because you might be able to use this tomorrow before the county commission. And I post this a couple times. Let me just pull up. I just happen to have the Fifth Circuit court opinion handy right here. Let me just move some stuff around on my computer screen. But the last two lines of it. And you can look it up, or I can send it to you. But it's pretty great. It says right here, for these reasons, and this is what the court opinion, the entire court opinion goes over the reasons. I'm not going to give them to you now. Again, we did it Monday show for like 2 hours. But it says, for these reasons, the petitioner's motion for a stay pending review is granted. Now, a stay means that they can't do anything. It's on hold. It's dead in the water. It's like a ship at anchor. You can't go anywhere. Nothing can be done with this. But there is no mandate right now. So as far as everybody's concerned, there is no mandate, all right? It's a company policy. And I'm trying to make this point that it's only – it's a company policy. And as a company policy, you know, you can go after them for wrongful termination in EEOC, you know, civil rights discrimination. What were you going to say? I'll finish this bit here.
Well, right. So you're absolutely correct. But the problem is all these far-left companies, these CEOs are using this as the opportunity and as an excuse to do it. The EEOC in Florida, the only office they have open is in Miami. We filed with them 2 months ago, and the first available appointment they had was January 26th. So
that's helpful.
Low-rolling. Yeah, exactly. So you can't file a lawsuit. You can't file anything until you go through the EEOC. What kind of nonsense is that? So I need a state government agency's approval to file a private lawsuit? This is all encompassing. And even the good politicians, they get up there and they play lip service. But then when you actually read the bills after they're passed, they got no teeth. So there's zero help for any of this. And that's
we're trying to read the bills before they're passed. That's why I'm doing this series of shows this week.
Well, right. Well, but when they're before they're passed, they're vastly different than after they finally make it through. They water them down to the point where they're useless. And that's kind of my plea to the county commissioner. And I'm going to beat them up a little bit, but I'm also, you know, I also need those guys to understand. You know, you're not at that. You're not on their team. You're not sitting at their table. I don't know why you're making making decisions. Well, they may be taking a cut, but overall, like the Milton or Santa Rosa County Commission is not sitting at the table for, you know, the New World Order.
Not on the. Are they? Is it possible for a county commissioner to also be on the board of directors of Santa Rosa Hospital? Or would that be a conflict of interest?
I don't think that it would be, but I don't think any of them are either.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
But, you know, my plead to them is, like, look, this is not going to stop with employee mandates. There's going to be a point where you're not even going to be allowed to go to the grocery store and buy food unless you've gotten this vaccine. And what are you going to do then? Are you going to fold? Are you going to just – because the vast majority of our county commissioners have said openly they have not gotten the vaccine and they have no intentions of getting the vaccine. So
the commissioner said that.
Why? The commissioner said that. Yeah, some of them in open meeting on record. So why would you – this is going to go to that point. So are you going to wait till then to fold, or are you going to try to stand up and say, no, you can't do that? Because every single decision that they've made since day one of this operation has fallen right in line with COVID regulations. They've made zero wake when the governor shut the state down. They volunteered and sent the sheriff's office to shut the beaches down when they shut businesses down. To the point where then when we got funding, the county got $37 million. They spent over four total hours talking about what to do with the $37 million that the county got. Not one word was said about small businesses being shut down. Not one word was talked about a landlord that wasn't allowed to collect rent for almost a year. Not one word was said about the tourist industry. It was all about fixing the drainage problems that their buddies created building bigger subdivisions.
Making the taxpayers pay for them too. Yeah.
You didn't stand up for the rights of businesses when they were shutting the businesses down. You're not standing up for the rights of people when you shut the beach down. You're not standing up for the rights of people now. So you're not standing up for anything. You're a jellyfish sitting behind a desk.
Yep. Yep. No, you're absolutely right. It's a crazy situation. I'll tell you something else that I was thinking of today. I was talking to Gene about this earlier, is that you look at any of these bills before the legislature right now, not one of them puts any burden whatsoever on the employers to prove that the jab even works. There's no requirements on them. All the requirements are on the employees in terms of proving that their religious beliefs are sincere. Well, how the hell do you do that? You know, and that's not a constitutional requirement. It doesn't say that Congress will make no law establishing a religion or prohibiting the sincere belief, you know, religious exercise thereof. It doesn't say that. You know, it just says, the free exercise of religion. You know, and so all these different things, go ahead, but you know what I'm getting at. The medical thing is the same thing.
Exactly. And in Florida, the religious exemption actually states outright that the definition of religion is broad and ungeneralized and cannot be defined, and it doesn't matter if you are the sole person in the world that holds that belief, it is still your right to believe it. So when they try to give you religion tests and what church do you go to and how many times, that violates Florida law.
Yeah. Well, enforcement laws, as I'm finding out, is the key. Writing them is only part of the step. We have to continually enforce them. Here's something you might be interested in too, and you might be able you may want to. And I'll talk to you about this after the show. To take our bills, our public health bill, and our parental rights bill. To the county commission and see if they want to endorse or pass a resolution in favor of, because that would put them in an interesting place. And one of the contingencies I put in here is if there's a state declared emergency. And see, I had it just here a second ago. Where did I put it? And basically, it says that the counties can, if the state finds a public health emergency, individual counties have the right to opt out and say there's no public health emergency here in our county. And we could have done that because if you remember the famous line by Mayor Lindsay when she was on my show, I'm just following the chain of command. Well, the CDC is not the head of doesn't run the country. There is no chain of command. And just because, the governor declares something doesn't mean that the individual, subdivisions thereof have to follow in lockstep. Let me see if I can find where I had it. And I got Pianca in the line too. He's going to join us in just a section. I'll find it.
Did you go directly to the Rockefeller website and type in lockstep and find out what her marching orders were?
No, I didn't. Do you have them?
Yeah, I actually, you can pull them up.
Well, let's take a look at that. That sounds good. Here's the section I was referring to. So the current law says that the state public health officer has to do to declare an emergency. So I added this section here that the county commissioners might find interesting. Counties shall have the right to terminate any declaration of public health emergency by determining that no such emergency exists in their county. Cities shall have the same legal right and ability. The same applies to rejecting any federal declarations, guidelines, or policies. There's your out.
What's that statute number?
Oh, no, it's mine. It's my bill. I'll send these both to you. I'll message them right over. I've got them right here. But the first is amendments to public health laws and authority. And I actually have the bills. I have links to the original state law, so you don't have to go hunting for that. And the second one is parental rights, which actually makes them parental rights. Let's get Pianki here and see if he wants to join us or what's going on. So, Pianki? You're on with David Jones, who's co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers and does a hell of a job watching over our local and county and state affairs here. What you got? Good morning, Pianki.
Well, you know, on this thing about the religious test,
mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. There is no religious test as to a person's beliefs. And a religion, there's many, many out there.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many gods, they're associating the religion based on what they know today with Jesus and so on and so on. Well, that's just not true because religion
exists
long before.
And who are they to assess what a sincere belief is? So this is the out. This is why I know this is written by big business, all these bills that are before the Florida legislature. Because every one of them puts all the burden on the employee to actually prove that they have a condition, which means they cannot get a vaccine. But they have to prove it through all these hoops. Same thing, you know, the employer has the discretion to say whether you're actually sincere in your religious. Well, that's none of their damn business. You know, that's
right.
Not how an exemption works. But that's in the law.
You
so
could be
laws,
a member.
Yeah, go ahead.
You could be a member of the Church of Satan if that's your religion. You know, I tell you something else they need to push for, too, is that uh-huh. Like employees have smoke breaks, they should have the ability to have prayer breaks, like in the Islamic religion. You can walk into a storekeeper and don't see nobody. You look over in a corner, everybody's on the carpet on their mat, and they're praying with their heads pointed east. So let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, if people want to pray, you know, that's fine. I don't care. That's good for them. I want to just clarify one thing that we were talking about with Dave earlier. This is the civil right. This is the case before the Fifth Circuit, and this is how strong the language is. So they said the petitioner's motion for a stay pending review is granted. Enforcement of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's COVID-19 vaccination and testing emergency temporary standard remains. This is the key. Remains stayed pending adequate judicial review of the petitioner's underlying motions for a permanent injunction. Here's the other part. In addition, it is further ordered, and this is really key. It is further ordered that OSHA take no steps to implement or enforce the mandate until further court order. So there's no mandate. And you can take that right to the county commission and you can say, look, guys, you know, there's no mandate. This is a company policy and there's no reason for it to exist. And I would be interesting if you could talk to the commissioners about requiring Santa Rosa Hospital to prove that the jab actually works. Let's put the burden on them. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't expect much out of the county commissioners at this point. It's a sad state, but we've tried for how long to get our illegal alien bill put on the agenda? It took
I got to talk to some other groups.
It took 2 months to get the letter, just a simple letter to the hospital, mm-hmm. even put on the agenda, and then they shot it down in less than 10 minutes.
What's going on with Calkins? Why are they so against him? And so he stuck his neck out and he did the right thing. Is he sort of losing his conviction now? Is he, you know, he did the right thing, but is he backtracking from that? What's going on?
No, James isn't backtracking. He's a politician. You know, he has goals and aspirations, I'm sure. He doesn't want his career to end in Santa Rosa County. You know, I don't know for sure. I haven't had that conversation with him, but he's very conservative. He's very helpful. He does a lot for us. Mm-hmm. But he's still a politician. Still worries about votes. He still worries about rubbing half the population wrong. Blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. So he's 90% of the way there. And he takes a hard stand on a lot of things, and he gets beat up for it pretty bad. But he, you know, we gotta.
But it sounds like he's representing him. more of the county than the other county commissioners. I think we need to form a coalition. And Pianki, if you have any wise words of wisdom, feel free, Gene, too, about how we can build a coalition around our illegal alien free zone bill. I just posted a video yesterday from the governor talking about all the flights that are coming in, all the extra people, all the buses, all the non-government organizations that are bringing illegal aliens in. It's only a matter of time. We already had somebody killed in Florida by an illegal alien, one of Biden's illegal aliens. It's already happened. It's going to happen here. The only question is how and when. And I want to try and prevent that by getting something preemptively there. But as the left says, I'm not going to let a crisis go to waste. I mean, there's a really big fat I told you so that I don't want to use, you know, if something happens to one of our citizens here in Santa Rosa County. But we need to get a coalition of groups together, like, now. Because it looks like the governor, the state is at least doing something about the vaccine and the mask mandates. Looks like they're going to get rid of those. So this gives us time to turn our attention to the illegal alien problem, which is massive all over Florida. It's worse in some other places like Miami and stuff, but it's going to be bad here. Everybody wants to come to Florida. They're flying people in. So we need a coalition, and I'm going to talk to Gulf Coast Patriots, and we can talk off the air about any other groups, but we need a coalition together to start fighting and pushing for that bill and getting some coverage of it in media other than me. What do you think?
Yeah, we definitely need to continue to work on that. My biggest problem with the way I do things is I'm constantly chasing fires. I'm constantly going after hot topics. And so we put things together. We put time and energy into things like our illegal alien bill, and then a bunch of spot fires pop up. My attention gets directed elsewhere. So
that's normal. More manpower. That's just the way it goes. Yeah.
So if we had more manpower, more of a presence that could stay on stuff like that, and. Because it's a bad thing. The normal immigrants, people that come to this country because they love this country, are on our team. We absolutely need those people, and they make us stronger.
Hey, I'm those people. I'm a Canadian. I'm a Canadian by birth. I am those people.
Oh, absolutely. And people that have flown in, bussed in, handed a bunch of free crap. They're not here to make our country better. They're not here to thrive. They're here to destroy everything that we've built for the last nearly 300 years.
Yeah. Well, there's two things we can do. One of them is to prevent them from make it impossible for them to live in our country. But the second thing we can do, and this is something I want to work on if I can ever get a hold of the Trump folks, is to get some business advisors together into places like El Salvador, especially because it's a small country, make a great model, but develop their country. And bring in some business investment and corporations and maybe some high tech and some computer stuff and some STEM training, you know, science, technology, I forgot what E is, but math, that kind of stuff. And in other words, we make it much more desirable, much more economically prosperous to stay in their own country. You know, that I think is a real secret to, keeping people, because I don't think, we're getting the dead weight. I mean, the people that want to make their country work are still there. The El Salvadorians, the Hondurans, the Guatemalans, even the Nicaraguans under communism, the people that want to make their country work are still there. We're getting the people that don't give a damn about their country. They're just coming here for our money. That's the difference.
Yep. You should you should put a surtax on remittances out of the country also.
Well, I would just block them. I would just ban them. You can't send money out of the country unless you're an American citizen. simple as that.
Well, then, that should be worked on. And another thing. People are taking the word health, H-E-A-L-T-H, out of the word OSHA is taken out of content. It never did really have anything to do about your biological disease-bearing health.
Mm-hmm.
It had to do with exposures to certain
your
chemicals and foreign matters that were caused.
Your occupational health. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it was about the businesses not negatively affecting your body, not you negatively affecting the business. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. At some point here, I'm going to go over the big bill. I don't know if you want to do that at this point. But Santa Rosa Hospital, there's got to be something we can do for them. This is my my dark side coming out here, but you need to report the people that have been forced to take a vaccine or lose their job and have either been injured or killed by it. And we need to do a regular report like that, and it has to be featured not just here, but in other media sources around here. You know, Santa Rosa News would be a good place to do that, for example, like a regular report. You know, two people died this week who didn't want the vaccine mandate, that kind of thing.
Yep. And to my knowledge so far, we've had two people that developed severe pulmonary embolisms and were put in the ICU. I have not heard how that turned out. I don't know what their current situation is on that. So hopefully they pulled through and they'll be okay. But I don't have much hope or optimism for anybody who takes this shot. And you know, we still really haven't even gotten into the bad part. All the studies that they use to put this thing together with show earmark is when it really goes south. So, you know, everybody who gets the shot and they say, oh, look, I'm fine. All you conspiracy theory guys are crazy. It's not over yet.
No. Did you say 2 year or 5 year? We just lost the number that you mentioned.
Two years.
Yeah.
Well, if you go back,
that's the thing.
I believe it's 2018, they were developing the vaccine, the original mRNA for SARS, the original SARS virus, and that's the research they used in building this mRNA therapy. So that they stopped the animal trials because at 2 years it had a 60% kill rate, and that's the same research that they used to develop this gene therapy treatment, and they didn't conduct any studies because they already had done so.
Well, where the study? Yeah, and this is why they didn't do animal trials, because all the animals died the first time. And SARS-CoV-1 has 72% of the genome of SARS-CoV-2. So they're almost the same thing. SARS-CoV-1, Dr. Fascist knew back in 2005, hydroxychloroquine killed it. That's why he banned it with SARS-CoV-2, because he wanted to sell vaccines. This is how insane these people are, how greedy, how sociopathic and psychopathic they are. They don't care. They don't care how many people die. And we've been over this enough times. I don't really have to repeat it. But it's a crazy thing that's going on, you know, right now with these different things. So what we need to do is fight these mandates and get them, you know, out of the way. But with the hospital, we need to, you know, dramatically state that a place that allegedly is a place you should want to go to improve your health, you know, to take care of a sickness, a disease, or an injury, a place that should be a good place to go, you know, is a place that's, you know, very likely to injure or kill you simply to make profits, to make a 20% bonus with remdesivir, which causes the kidney failure, which causes your body not to get rid of the fluid that the kidneys usually get rid of, which end up in your lungs and drowning you, which they try and blast out of your lungs with a ventilator. You know, I mean, it's 97% of the people who end up on a ventilator die. And that's just a simple fact. That's why I made that posting the other day that, you know, early treatment works. We know early treatment works because the people that got early treatment, almost all of them, you can still talk to. They're still here. The people that got the remdesivir ventilator treatment, you can't talk to because 97% of them are dead. And I hate to put in those stark terms, but that's really what's going on here. Scary stuff.
Yep. And the really scary thing too, and I, you know, I'm trying to look into the future here. We all know that COVID was predicted by Dr. Fascist and all that group with the World Economic Forum and Agenda 21 and all that stuff. So anybody got any guesses as to what their simulation was, 2021 World Economic Forum?
Yeah, it was COVID. It was a COVID disease. Actually, it's funny you should mention this because I went over what's that?
It was actually smallpox. So this year's theater was smallpox. So
When did they do that?
Last few months it's been going on.
And this is the World Economic Forum?
Yep.
Okay, I got to take a look at that because I remember when they did the World Economic Forum in 2019, right before they released COVID. You know, it was like October.
Exactly,
You know, so we're looking. Now, here's a question for you. Why would a world health pandemic be simulated by an economic forum?
Yep. Thought about that myself.
I mean, we raised that. What you might want to do is go back to our shows March 15th, 16th, and 17th of this year. I did 3 shows on why the vaccine came before the virus, why the virus is engineered to the vaccine and not the other way around. You know, I've got a timeline. I should give my timeline, too. I've got a huge timeline I've been compiling on all the different events. In fact, I've got some videos to watch on Dr. David Martin has the story of the patents. That's the next thing I want to start tracing because the NIH is now in court with Moderna trying to decide. They're fighting over the patents. They're fighting over they're like vultures over the corpse. You know, who's going to get the money? You know, so it's a really fascinating thing. It looks like Pianki left us, so I'm sure he'll call back at some point. At least I hope so. But so the things we need to do, like I say, I want to talk to you. We need to build a coalition here. So we just have some off-air stuff to do. Maybe we can get some of the gun folks in the area because they're great lobbyists, maybe the gun stores or something like that, you know, and talk to the folks and maybe build a coalition of gun stores, of just groups like Gulf Coast Patriots, maybe even Republicans. Do you think they might be interested in actually helping us? Is that possible that the geldings will actually, become stallions? What are the chances of our local Republicans doing anything?
We've still got a lot of work to do with that party. That's actually a discussion. Off air, but yeah, I've gotten a lot of resistance from the Republicans and the Republican clubs in our area, even after supporting them financially and giving them venues, using my building, et cetera, et cetera. So,
what are they objecting to? What you can make public, like I say, you're always free to withhold stuff. But what is it? Because there's probably Republican groups across the country that are doing exactly the same thing. So, again, the reason I talk about local issues, in detail is because chances are you've got the same problems we have. You know, if you've got a historic district, you've got the same problems Milton has in preserving it. If you've got any number of economic – if you've got a county commission like we have a county commission where they're basically bought and paid for by real estate developers and housing developers, you've got the same problems we've got. So, a lot of these problems are universal. And so this is why if we can deal with them here and we can provide a good model here, then you can use that model in your county too. And that's a lot of the reason why this works. And, of course, people in different countries – and we haven't even talked about the international folks – I just found out we're in Azerbaijan, of all places to be, which is really – so Azerbaijan, we got a Skype line. You want to call us? Look on the broadcast page. We've got a Skype line right there. So this is – and I'm wondering, other countries, if they have the same kind of situations here. But county commissions are county commissions. Local politicians are bought and paid for very easily by local business, car dealerships, law firms, construction companies, housing developers, any large company. In fact, large companies with branch offices in small counties, are a lot powerful than the counties themselves. So all that stuff has to be taken into account. Anyway,
yeah,
Republicans. Go ahead.
Locally, the Republicans, they just keep throwing roadblocks. They keep once I mention his name,
No, unless it's that they're public, they hold a public position. In that case, you can mention the name. Feel free.
No, but they just keep throwing roadblocks. They keep little things that slow everything down, and they build all these committees, all these little groups that they build. So they seem great on the surface, right? We're getting mm-hmm. people activated, involved, but they park them. They get them in a building. They get them in a meeting once a month. They stare at a computer screen and they rah, 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 and then they all go home and they sit on their ass because they think that they've done something positive. And it's destructive. They don't encourage them to do anything other than register more Republicans, which, more people voting for the same garbage that we've had for the last 60 years is not something that I'm real keen on.
So that's why I unregistered as a Republican, and I unregistered for the specific purpose of hoping that millions of other people would unregister and send them a message that they're not doing their job. So guessing that our Republican lazy butts are everybody's lazy as other people's lazy butt Republicans across the country, what are some of the things that they're objecting to? Why don't they want to stop illegal aliens? Why don't they want to openly come out against vaccine and mass mandates as a party? I just made a comment this morning on Facebook that it's only after the Fifth Circuit stopped the mandate cold that the National Republican Party, you know, what's her name? Rona, not Rona, but that was the gossip columnist. Mitt Romney's niece. What's her name? The woman that's running the Republican Party. And she actually came out and said, yes, we're fully against the mandate. Well, it's easy to be fully against the mandate now that the Fifth Circuit Court has already stopped it. It doesn't take any courage. You know, yeah, that's where they are. So I'll think of her name in a minute. But anyway, where are we going? Gene, can you look up, please, for me, the head of the Republican Party? It's Mitt Romney's niece. So she's not doing much good.
Right.
But what are they objecting to here? I mean, why do they want illegal aliens, or why don't they want to do something about illegal aliens or vaccine mandates or mask mandates as a party? What's in the Republican Party objects to that?
The only thing I keep getting out of them is they don't want to alienate anybody. They want to be the party of everybody. They want all the votes, and they're so proud of themselves because for the first time, and I can't tell you how long, there are more registered Republicans than registered Democrats in the state of Florida. Well, mm-hmm. that's fine and dandy. But when you are isolating parts of your party and, you know, people like me, people like you, that are no longer registered as Republicans because of the things that they do, and they're going after these people wearing masks. Oh, well, we don't need to talk about mask mandates and how ineffective masks are because we'll lose those people that think they're effective and they won't vote for us. We don't want to talk about vaccine mandates because these hospitals and these businesses contribute a lot to campaigns, and these are voters. So we need – they're going after the moderates and the left to get their votes, and they're isolating the base of their party. And they still don't understand, no matter how many times I scream it at them, that the reason why – Donald Trump and DeSantis are popular is because they don't pander to the moderate and to the left. I'm not a big fan of either one of them, to be completely honest, but they say things that are unpopular, they do things that are unpopular, and they bring out the strong base and the silent base in the Republican Party. Themselves Republicans or not really Republicans. Personally, I don't even know what to call myself. I'm not a libertarian. I'm not, you know, a constitutionalist. I don't even know how to define my belief system, but the best way I've done is leave me alone and don't touch my stuff. That's pretty much wraps up how I feel.
It's a great name for a party. Leave me alone. Don't.
Amen.
I call myself a constitutional independent.
Person's name is Ronna McDaniel.
Ronna McDaniel, that's it. Yes, thank you.
But I think, too, in Florida, Matt Gaetz, I think if someone competent would run against him, I think they'd have a good chance of winning, too, because as far as I'm concerned, it's like he's just another pretty boy. He's all lip service.
Yep. He had a lot of hate for him when he first came out. I know Greg did, too, but he's just a clown now.
Well, no, actually, we did some really good work at WBY. I mean, the citizenship question on the census, that bill that
used
was written literally on the air, you know, he did take it to Washington. It did go to members of Congress. It did go to the White House. And I think because you can see part of it in the president's executive order, you know, some of the similar sentiments. And there were some good things in that bill. That thing was good. But that was, like I say, pre-hair gel and pre-being a media star. And the more he pushed being a media star, the less effective he was and the less time he spent in his own district. And so he can
recover. So what he cared about is constituents.
Well, that's true. But he can recover from that, but he's got to start doing it like now. Do you know who's running against him? Do we have any primary challenges, Dave, that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Fine.
I know working on a guy for Doug Broxson because he's a miserable nightmare.
Oh, yeah. This is the guy that ran out of you had like a town hall meeting, and rather than answer questions, he ran like a little baby out the back door.
Yep, literally ran him out of the building. That was quite embarrassing.
Yeah, you want to play the Monty Python? Bravely ran away. That's funny. Yeah, so, okay. So we need to, I don't know, the Republican groups, you know, do we want them to, you know, follow us? Do we want to associate, or do we want to say, hey guys, when you get your act together, call us? I mean, what should be our interaction with them, do you think?
I think you need to look at all people, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, whatever, and which one lines up more with your values.
Well, I'm the Republican Party. I'm in the Republican Executive Committee. I'm going to try to transform it from the inside.
Okay.
But I've told them before, I won't be involved with anything that squashes or squelches any one of these independent groups. It happened at the Veterans Day Parade. So we were all supposed to be in the Veterans Day Parade. Everything was set up. I paid for everybody's magnets. They were using my venue. They used all of my resources. And then at the ninth hour, literally 9 p.m. the day before the parade, I find out that Mike and Cindy's group, the Citizens for Medical Freedom, was disinvited because they didn't approve of their anti-vaccine signs. Well, that's what this group is. That's what they do. You knew all about who they were beforehand. You invited them. They didn't ask to be part of this.
Yeah.
And then at the last second, you're going to pull them. So I pulled out of the parade. They weren't allowed to use any of my material, and I wasn't involved. But
for that reason. Yeah, yeah. It's like when Bianchi says that, they're so afraid of being called racist, they won't do anything they think will offend people. And the people they actually end up offending is their own base. The Republican Party offends me. I'm the person who would be in the party. I've got a radio show. We're heard in over 70 countries. All over the United States. This is a venue that if they backed us would be a whole lot bigger. They could send our show to every Republican, chapter across the country and say, look, here's a citizen legislature. Here are folks that are doing things that no one's ever done before. The ideas are better, stronger than what's coming out of the legislature and the special interests. They could do that for us.
Right.
So there's a perfect example of why I have no use for the Geldings. Because
and replace them with young, energetic, constitutionally minded people. I don't see another way. I've definitely looked. The Tea Party had a lot of good points. It was a great organization, but it was crushed from both sides because neither one, the Republicans or the Democrats, wanted any competition. So the only way that we're going to be able to change part of this system is to get inside the Republican Party, start flipping these seats because they're not going to crush their own party. And that's the only way I see it doing it. That's more of a long game. That's more of a longer term plan. We've got to fight that battle as well as the one on the front lines with these mandates. Because quite honestly, I don't know if we got another couple of years in us without being a third world impoverished country like Venezuela by the time 24 gets here. And that's the problem. All Republicans want to do is vote. So they want to, Biden's in there. He probably stole it, but he's there, so we'll just wait till 24. Well,
they put him in. They put him in. This is something people need to understand about the Republicans. The Republicans put in Joe Biden. Okay, he would not have been there if the electoral challenge had gone through. He would not be there if Mike Pence had sent the electors back when states brought two conflicting sets of electors, one for Biden, one for Trump. He was the one that actually did the most damage by putting Biden in there. But he would not be there if Mitch McConnell, hadn't canceled the Senate session. Instead of counting all the electors, and it just wimped out and said, well, we have to, for the good of the country, let's all come together. BS. So they put Biden in. They could have stopped it January 20th. They could have stopped it January 6th. They could have stopped, I think, December 28th. There was some kind of a vote count then. They could have stopped it after the election, said this is a fraud, we need to do it over. They could have stopped it at any number of places along the way, and they didn't. So you want to know why Brandon's there? Brandon's there every bit as much because of the Geldings as because of the Marxists. I mean, that's what you got in this country.
Yep.
You got Marxist and Democrat. That's what it comes down to. So I'm not going to sign on to either one. But G made a really good point earlier about reaching out to other people. I never talk about party politics when it comes to our bills. I mean, our bills are our bills. Our bills are just, the vaccine freedom applies to everybody. It doesn't apply to Republicans. Our tax bills apply to everybody. our judicial review bills apply to everybody. Our bills that, you know, have EMP protection or have a liquidity corporation to handle the bankruptcies that are coming in, or any of the other things that we legislated, the many different things that we legislated on, voter ID. Those are for everybody. Those aren't partisan bills. No, if actually you look at our bills, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any of our bills that's really partisan. You know, our tax bills help working families, which the Democrats would claim. Our tax bills are tax cuts, which the Republicans would claim. So there's really no partisanship here. So Gene makes a good point. I mean, I'd love to reach out to Democrats more. I think most of them are so far leftist, they think of anything that isn't leftist as the enemy. So that's a hard sell. But at least I would think that the Republican Party, which you'd think would be aligned closer to what we're doing here as conservative news advocates, which is the other thing I claim to be, it's a new profession I invented, along with everything else we invent here. But you'd think they'd be a little more enthusiastic about a citizen legislature that's doing the very things that they allegedly are for. And we're doing it for them. And they're not.
Yeah. Well, and you get, the Republicans are the ones that did this war on drugs and made marijuana illegal. You start peeling off all these now crimes. They call them crimes because they're statutorily illegal. But for me, you can't have a crime unless there's a victim. So if an individual wants to smoke marijuana, then that's up to that individual. They even tried outlawing alcohol. We all know how that turned out. You want to start selling drugs to kids. Now I got a problem. But if you start getting rid of all of these laws that are just nonsensical, mm-hmm. I mean,
working on it.
Sabatini, exactly. Anthony Sabatini, one of our representatives in Florida. He stood next to the binders full of regulations that people and citizens were supposed to live by that were regulatory from non-government, non-elected agencies. And Anthony Sabatini is not a big man. And it was standing above his shoulders. And that's not including the supporting documents. The supporting documents would have filled the room that he was in.
Yeah.
These are not even laws. These are just regulatory rules that people have to live by.
Where's he in this legislative session? I haven't heard a comment from him yet. Unless I missed him.
He's been all over. He's been trying to let everybody know that some of the Republican establishment is trying to kill the special session. That way it's dead on arrival. He's out there. He's really working. Anthony Sabatini, as far as I can see, is on our team.
No, he's on our team. But, let me go to his Facebook page, see if I can find something.
His big thing is Twitter. If you go to his Twitter site, all his stuff is there. I don't know if he does Facebook or not, but.
Yeah.
If we get rid of all these unnecessary laws, you go back to the Bible. There are 10 commandments that people are supposed to live by. You don't need thousands and thousands and millions, hundreds of millions of pages of legislation for people to live their lives. You start gutting all that crap and getting rid of it and getting out of people's lives and get your hand out of their pocket. The people will come to that party. You don't have to work to get people to join that movement. When they start realizing paying less for fuel and they're not paying less for groceries and their taxes are going down, and you don't have to work to convince those people to jump on board. They're going to flock to you.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I said, I think the Republicans have outlived their usefulness. I know the Democrats have. But I don't believe in parties anyway, and the system is so rigged for the two parties that I'm not going to waste my time trying to create a third party. I'd rather create a citizen legislature, something that they have no concept of what to deal with. And we'll see what we can do with this. Should be interesting. Okay. Anything else I can we can discuss here? I'll take a look at Twitter for Anthony Sabatini and see what he's been doing. I just have his regular Facebook page here. Can't even find his legislative. Oh, there's his legislative one. We'll see. Anyway, but you saying he's on Twitter?
Yeah, he's definitely active on Twitter.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big Twitter person, so I'll have to take a look at that. All right. Anything else, or should we do it again next week?
That is all I've got for this week. I'll probably have a live video up of the my interaction with the commissioners tomorrow, so I expect some fireworks on that.
If you can do that. Is there a video from the rally? I've been trying to find one.
Yeah, somebody sent me a link to the full video on the rally. I'll try to find that and send it to you.
Yeah, throw in my messenger. I've sent you the two bills that you might want to present to the county commission and see if, or at least email them and then see if they might pass a resolution. See if they even read them. They're going to be shocked. There's so much good stuff in there. It might be quite fascinating. All right, sir, thank you very much. Give yourself a contact information plug in so people can find you, and if they want to get involved in helping, or if they want to have a model organization in their county too, that'd be something that folks might be interested in.
Yep. So we're Centers of Volunteers. It's srv1776.com. That's our website, srv1776@protonmail.com. If you need to get a hold of us, we're also on Facebook with Arise Patriots. Facebook, Twitter, and Gab, Arise Patriots, that's us. So reach out if you're not local. We can still help you set up your own organization. That's one of our primary goals, and our mission is helping other groups start, form, legal, all that kind of fun stuff. We can't do it all, and I don't plan to, but I'll help everybody to try to get set up and do their own thing.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right, sir. Thank you very much. We'll talk off the air about things we can do for our illegal alien free zone coalition that we need to form and do something public with that. Should be very interesting. All right. We shall do it again soon.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Here we go. So it's Gene and me and anybody else who wants to join us, 215-383-3832. I made something for Christmas last year during the lockdown, got a little bit creative. And since we're in the Christmas season and the spirit of brotherly love, let me play this for you. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again. So here is just a friendly little message from your Action Radio revolutionaries. In preparation for Christmas and New Year's, we have just a few ideas and suggestions to make your holiday complete. Granted, these are times of adversity brought about by bureaucrats in what we affectionately call the leftist lockdown orgasmic power trip. But don't let a completely illegal, martial law style abdication and removal of your constitutional rights get in the way of a decent glass of eggnog with friends. After all, 6-foot social distancing is a completely false concept for a virus that can linger in the air for hours in aerosol form, can be sneezed well over 200 feet, can travel through an entire 10-story building central air system in a couple of minutes, and goes through a mask like a mosquito through a chain link fence. So, no matter what you do, everyone is getting exposed sometime. Leaving the healthy people alone accomplishes this in about 10 weeks. So, this should have been done the end of May. Speaking of masks, besides being a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights against seizure of your person, in this case, your face, without due process, the state can't make you wear a mask. So, go home if you're sick, but if not, go free face, as all real Americans are doing, and enjoy the Christmas season. Apparently, there is the deplorable lack of New Year's resolutions this year. Well, I have one. To resist. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to restore and rejuvenate that inner rugged individual the left has tried so hard to put behind a mask and lockdown, and I'm going to resist. So, you find a creative way to resist, there's your revolution resolution. Remember, folks, those Twilight Zone episodes where people wore masks? They were supposed to make you think, not make you copy them. Family values should be emphasized this Christmas with the traditions that bind us together. Sit as close as you can at dinner. Remember those wet kisses from grandma when you were a kid? Engage in spirited debates. Don't forget to use serving dishes where everyone sticks their own personal fork and spoon in, all in the interest of sharing. Remind everyone that closing churches violates the First Amendment. Closing businesses without criminal convictions violates our Fifth Amendment right to life, liberty, and property. And closing schools denies our kids their right to an education. So, you may want to point that out to your governors and mayors this festive season so they understand their transgressions and can repent. I would have suggested you go to New York this year, but quite frankly, they don't have the balls to celebrate New Year's. No, really, the ball isn't dropping. Maybe we should rename Times Square Tiananmen Square West. Remember that there are many great gifts you can share this Christmas, particularly AR-15s and AK-47s. Those tend to warm the heart. As we say at Action Radio, world peace through strength. Just remember that everything the government tells you is wrong. So if you want to avoid COVID, don't take the vaccine. Go to the beach instead. Get that sunshine and vitamin D. Stay away from home. Engage in commerce and business. Travel as much as you can. Work out at crowded gyms. Drive extensively, preferably with the windows open. Patronize businesses that are in open rebellion. And resist, resist, resist the doctor dictatorship. In closing, let me just say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Hanukkah. Muslims, you don't have a holiday at this time, so just go eat Chinese food on Christmas Eve and meet some really nice Jewish folks. Hey, they might be your neighbors. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com, BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Action Radio. Dedicated to fixing everything. All right, we're back here. Gina, producer, and of course me, and then anybody who wants to call us, 215-383-3832. It's our wide open free-for-all. I used to do stories. It's interesting. I had seen stories. They're not ready for Facebook vaccine report, and I did the election report, election correction report. And vaccines have been dominating, you know, for so long here, just because of Dr. Fascist and the health oppressors in government, that's kind of taken over. But there are some things happening in the audits, but nothing major has happened for a while, and so we're still waiting for that. At this point, Arizona should have already recalled their Biden electors, disqualified Biden, and sent Trump electors to Washington and said, here, these are the correct ones. That's what they should have done. So we're still waiting for that. Michigan, Wisconsin, they're still going over their stuff. There's more fraud coming out in Georgia. I think Pennsylvania. And so it's there. It's just not happening anywhere near as fast as we would like it. And so let's do that. That's what's happening there. So let's I'm gonna check with Jean, see if there's any particular pressing issues she has. I want to lighten things up a little bit. I just want to play our Christmas theme and some of the other things. Because we're pretty heavy today. So, it's, you know, I like to... you know, sort of change things up so you don't get, you know, totally burdened with the oppression of legislation and technical details. Gene, got some stories or things or places we should go at this point? Because I've got my usual pile of stuff here on the computer.
No, nothing in particular. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me go to the story here. This is, go ahead.
I just want to make one comment. If you heard that, I heard yesterday that in Canada, they have a new diagnosis there as well. It's someone can be diagnosed with climate change.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, no. I'm going to fall off my chair. What? They can be diagnosed with climate change?
That's what I heard. I was listening to someone talk last night. Not only that, but they said here in this country, the heart issues, you know, people that are that normally don't have heart issues that are getting heart issues, that could be possibly caused by climate issues as well.
Sure it's not racism?
Climate change and all that. Pardon me?
Can you I said, you sure it's not racism? Just whatever
well,
racism
that, that could be too.
Good, we'll
yeah,
look at it. Can you find me a story on that? Do you want to take a couple minutes and see what you can find? I'll go through this Tampa Bay Times article.
I'm not sure I'll be able to because this is by this I was listening to a guy that I normally listen to on a daily basis. So
okay.
I'm not sure where he gets this information from, but
Let me look then. Let me look right now. This is you've piqued my interest, as they say. So Canada as diagnosis.
Yeah.
For sickness, so diagnosis for climate change. Are we not phrasing it correctly? I'll pull this up for now. I'm going to have to modify it. Okay. Oh, Canadian woman diagnosed with climate change. You're absolutely right. Canada diagnoses world's first patient that's suffering. I'm sorry, this is too funny. Let me just I'll pick the top one just for the hell of it. This is exactly what we needed. Oh, here's the website is Fact Based America, okay, and it's got climate change is bad for the economy. Save our planet. So we got the greenies, all right, and then of course they send me the obligatory sign up for our website thing. This is from Antoinette Aho. A-H-O. I'm not making this up. Anyway, so Antoinette Aho, November... I can't say that with a straight face. I'm sorry. This is from November 14th. Dr. Kyle Merritt of British Columbia. Maybe I should do it in Canadian accent, eh? Right, Dr. Kyle Merritt of British Columbia, eh? Created a new diagnosis simply for suffering from climate change. His patient, a Canadian woman, experienced breathing issues in line with the country's record heat waves. She's suffering from heat exhaustion. She's not suffering from climate change. What kind of idiot doctor is this? Why would this person even have a license? All right, here's the quote. If we're not looking at the underlying cause and we're just treating the symptoms, like what, heat exhaustion, we're just not going to keep falling further and further behind. We're just going to keep falling further and further behind. I can't read this with a straight face. I'm sorry. Dr. Merritt told Glacier Media. Gene, are you sure this isn't a sarcastic site? This can't be for real. However,
I don't know. That wasn't. I mean, I didn't get it from the site. I was just listening to the person last night, and he was talking about in this country, heart issues are now for some people are being attributed to climate change, and then he went on to say about in Canada, and they are.
Let's see what Antoinette Aho says. This is hysterical. If we're not looking at the underlying cause and we're just treating the symptoms, we're going to keep falling further and further behind. Dr. Merritt told Glacier Media. Well, the idea of Glacier Media doing something on climate change, I don't know. That to me is just hysterical, right? And then it says, however, so here's the underlying causes, right? The woman was previously diagnosed with asthma, diabetes, and was living in a trailer without air conditioning. Well, do you think living in a sweatbox, you know, with asthma might contribute to a problem? So the climate change she's worried about is the climate in her trailer.
Well, the
the thing is, Greg, you would think that's common sense. However, we seem to be having a lot of lack of common sense lately.
Oh, God. I'd love to get Jordan Peterson's take on this. Oh, here we go. Dr. Merritt received praise and criticism for his diagnosis from the international medical community. Oh, please. Here's a quote. I think it's really great that medical professionals are starting to bring visibility to the fact that climate change is actually a health hazard. And this is from Marina Romanello of The Lancet, the same people that killed a bunch of people with hydroxychloroquine overdoses to prove it didn't work. That's The Lancet. That's the British magazine. Remember that story from not too long ago, from I think mid-2020?
Yeah.
They did a false study, and the New England Journal of Medicine also did a false study. Here we go. Opposing his ruling, climate realism's Anthony Watts. Oh, see, there we go. Yeah, I've read a bunch of his stuff. Climate realist. He has a website. What's up? WATTS or apostrophe S up. You know, he wrote Merritt's diagnosis was a political, not a medical statement, and might be considered medical malpractice. There you go. Whereas each of the patient's conditions has identifiable medical treatments, there's no medical treatment for climate change. Yeah, well, you can always move to Alaska. You know, go to Fairbanks. You want climate change? Go to Fairbanks. I'll show you climate change. I've been to Fairbanks. I mean, it was cool in the summertime. In the winter, 65 below zero. You want climate change? Got a problem with your trailer? No air conditioning? Fairbanks. Trust me, you'll feel a lot better.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I don't dare read another one of these, but this is too funny. 15.com. Oh, here we go. Global warming has gone from being a most worrisome symptom of industrial and human activity to a condition that has been directly blamed for health troubles after a doctor in Canada made what is possibly the world's first diagnosis of climate change. She's an elderly woman. She's got, diabetes. She's got asthma. She lives in a trailer without air conditioning, and she's blaming climate change for having heat problems. Call me crazy, but I think it's the microclimate that's causing her the problem. Oh, my God. Thank you for bringing that up. That's too hysterical. I mean, we got to give you a round of applause for that. It was too funny. Hang on. Here we go. Here you go.
You think one thing can get any crazier than you hear something that's just absolutely crazy.
Oh, that's insane. But the problem is he's going to get publicity because he says climate change is the problem. So all the lefties are going to come out. And they're going to say, yeah, see, diagnosed with climate change. And, of course, people are going to call in from work sick with climate change, right? They can use this. Kids are going to stay home from school because they're depressed and sick from climate change. They need mental health days because they're worried about the world ending. This is the worst possible thing that can happen because people are going to take this and run with it. So if you find more stories on climate change abuse, please let me know. All right, here's a story from Tampa Bay Times. This is actually pretty good. Florida vaccine mandate bill doesn't go far enough, activists say. A vocal group who hesitate to or refuse to take the COVID-19 vaccine. I love that word hesitate. In other words, you're still going to get it, but you're just kind of waiting for a bit. You're vaccine hesitant. No, I'm vaccine confirmed. I'm not going to do it. It's pretty easy in my case. Or who refuse to take the COVID-19 vaccine are pressuring Republican lawmakers to guarantee no government mandates of any kind. Well, that sounds good. Well, obviously, you can tell this is a liberal news source. Tallahassee, Dateline Tallahassee, published 5 hours ago by Kirby Wilson and Lawrence Mower, M-O-W-E-R. Tallahassee, on a perfect 75-degree afternoon, see no climate problem there, at Florida's capital, the signs told the story. For the greater good equals communism. I kind of like that sign. Unvaccinated lives matter. Oh, that's so cute. At a spirited Tuesday rally, a few hundred Floridians demanded an end to vaccine mandates. I know, we talked to them on the bus ride up. For nearly 2 hours, the audience listened as more than a dozen speakers strode into the sunshine to extol the virtue of personal choice. Well, it's not a virtue, it's a necessity, but this is a liberal magazine. Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez spoke. There were flags and chants, and at the end, an impromptu rendition of God Bless America. Oh, gee, heaven forbid we should have God Bless America at a rally. Cindy Cagle's quoted in this. Cindy Cagle is going to be with us tomorrow, does the Medical Freedom Report at 6:30 in the morning Central Time. Cindy Cagle, back to the article, a member of the anti-mandate group, at least they don't say anti-vax, anti-mandate group, Citizens for Medical Freedom, came to the Capitol from her Pensacola home, and for nearly the entire event held above her head a sign, God's vaccine equals natural immunity equals 99.8% survival. You got to like Cindy. We're going to have to ask her about that. This is someone who's never an activist before. This is what's so crazy about it. This is all new to her. She didn't.
That's what's
she
so
wasn't
awesome.
A, yeah. She wasn't what Michael Savage would call a red diaper doper baby, or a red doper diaper baby. Anyway, no, red diaper doper baby. That's what he calls communists that raise communist kids. No, she's new to activism, and this is the kind of person you want too. This is the kind of person I want taking our bills to Tallahassee, because she's not a professional. She's not an advocate that's been doing this all her life. She's not a registered lobbyist or any of those kind of professional things. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, so Cindy, let me see, Cindy, she quoted in her sign. She says her friends marveled at her stamina. She said she's fighting against federal orders like the one issued by President Brandon, mandating vaccines or testing in the country's large workplaces. To her, the fate of the country hangs in the balance. Ooh, that sounds impressive. So she said, there are so many people living in fear. It's incredible. I see our country falling apart. And then the article says, not 100 yards away, inside windowless Capitol Hill, Capitol building chambers, lawmakers were having a different conversation. Throughout the special session, Republican leaders have been caught between two sides. Yeah, what, their donors and reality? Now let's see what those two sides are. One is a silent but influential business community opposed to government interference in the workplace. I don't think they're that silent. Gene, just while I'm reading this, if you have a quick second to look up businesses lobbying the Florida State Legislature, or businesses with a stake in the outcome of the special legislative session or something, or just, you know, businesses in the, you know, something like that. If you can just take a quick look around and see if any of these groups have been outed. Any of these big business communities, like, you know, do we have a state big pharma, for example? I'd be really curious if there's something on that. All right, so the article says, one is a silent but influential business community opposed to government interference in the workplace. The other side is a small number of passionate activists opposed to vaccine mandates who are frustrated because they feel the state isn't going far enough. Well, it says the dilemma facing the Republicans who control the legislature, however, has rarely surfaced during the lawmaking process of the special session. Lawmakers have mostly stuck to the script given to them by speakers Chris Sprouls, Republican of Palm Harbor, Senate President Wilton Simpson, Republican of Trilby, I'm not sure where that is, and Governor Ron DeSantis. On Tuesday, that was yesterday, folks, they moved four bills backed by leadership that collectively represent Florida's response to the federal vaccine mandates. The full House and Senate chambers will take each of them up Wednesday. That's today. So basically what this is the fix is in. They're following the script. The leaders, speaker is Chris Sprouls, Republican of Palm Harbor. That would be Speaker of the House, Senate President Wilton Simpson, Republican of Trilby, and Governor DeSantis. They probably sat down over coffee or whiskey or something and hammered out the bills. Now, then they take those bills and they send them to the sessions, the committees, and the committees basically approve what's already been approved. So they do a backroom deal. They agree to this, and then now they're following the script. And so they're going to debate, and they're going to ask questions, and ultimately they're going to vote for these four bills, which I've proven three of them so far. Well, actually, one of them is bad, the one that doesn't take out the vaccine mandate. One of them is pretty good. There's one on which I haven't gone over in detail because there's no need to, on preventing public disclosure of employees who seek a religious or a medical exemption. So we have sunshine laws. Anytime great. You do anything with government, yeah. Let me just finish this last sentence. Hold on just a second.
Sorry.
So anyway, so sunshine. So the way the sunshine laws work is that any communication with government is fair game, because they figure that things should not be done in secret as far as sunshine goes. So if you communicate with government in terms of like EEOC that Dave was talking about earlier, in terms of getting a religious exemption or a medical exemption, when you apply to a government agency for approval or a corporation or government if you're doing this, that doesn't become public record right away. They have to wait till the conclusion of the investigation or your case before they make it public, which is good, because otherwise people, if they thought they're going to be outed in public, then of course the corporations could just look up which employees are filing these things and just fire them. And so that's why that's a good provision to have the public records hidden during the time of an investigation. Gene, go ahead, please.
Okay, this is the first one I opened up, and this is just a group of statewide nursing home association, or the statewide nursing home association. They asked for the legislation to be altered because what we talked about another time, Medicare and Medicaid, if you don't have workers don't have the vaccine by the date, by December 5th and January 2nd, they can lose funding. And so They just, here it just says that while Governor DeSantis said he would challenge that rule, he hasn't done nothing yet. So I don't know if that means that the legislative people would be the one to take it up or not.
So who can lose funding, though?
Anything that,
who would lose funding? Yeah, the nursing homes would lose funding?
Yes. Like because I'm not vaccinated, the nursing homes I go to would lose money. Yes. Because the Biden,
how do they lose money? Is it the CMS?
What are most of the people in nursing homes? They're Medicare, Medicaid.
Right.
And so, yeah. I mean, so he's doing – Biden – He's pulling and this is known, been known for a while. But he's thought about it in all different angles, or the cronies that be, to get their agenda pushed. Because not only now they can say, well, you know, the everybody needs it if you have so many employees, but now in order for those companies to stay in business, because you have to get paid.
Right.
You know, so it's like if I'm not vaccinated and they lose money, then they're going to say, okay, see, yeah, we'll get someone else that is vaccinated.
Interesting. So it keeps coming back to this central Medicare, Medicaid system, this group. Is it a government agency or is it a private corporation? Do you know about them, the people that pay the Medicare bills?
What, Medicare, Medicaid?
CMS.
That's federal. Yeah, that's federal money. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's all government bureaucracy crap.
Do you know where they're headquartered?
But there's – oh, God, they must have – I have no clue, but they have – I mean, they have things in every state because Medicaid is usually governed by the states as far as where their monies go. But, you know, the federal government gives states a lot of money for programs because those are for the poor and the – Well, they're you know, like the elderly and then the poor, those that are on, those that are, you know, were hurt or had medical issues and now are in nursing homes or can't work.
Okay, this is very interesting. It keeps coming back to this thing. So once this legislative session, maybe even today, if it's all over with today, what I'm going to start doing is looking into this center. And if this is the one that Patty Burke mentioned yesterday. Someone else, I don't know if Dr. Judy Mikovits mentioned, but somebody else mentioned this Center for Medicaid, there's another one, Medicaid, Medicare. And I keep forgetting which is which because I'm not really well-versed on this. We need to find someone
Medicare
who
is for usually for the elderly. Medicaid is for – usually younger people.
Who can't afford health insurance, right? I guess.
Well, it's more than that. It could be usually they have some type. They were in a very severe accident and they're head injured, or they've got major medical issues
where
they can't work or they can't afford other health care insurance. So then that they're put on that. Yes, but it's not. I mean, the Medicaid. That's for elderly. Medicare is for the elders. Medicaid, those poor people, they usually get the minimal of health care benefits going anywhere. You know, they're in a nursing home, and they usually are the ones, unfortunately, that, okay, they need a wheelchair. They're going to get, I mean, okay, if it moves, fine. Have four wheels, fine. They, you know, it's just amazing the bureaucracy, the red tape, what they'll agree upon, what they won't.
Yeah, it's going to be the least, it's going to be the cheapest, it's going to be whatever they can get away with kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. There's a...
Usually those are the programs, too, when, like, let's say there are budget cuts, mm-hmm. they usually cut funding in both those areas.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a huge scandal. And the fact that now what we need to establish is a connection between CMS, Center for Medicaid Systems, or Medicare Systems, and the health bureaucracy, CDC, NIH, FDA. In fact, I don't know if you're on your regular computer right now, but can you look up and see if there's a CMS connection to, say, the CDC? Is Medicare, Medicaid...
I've got to go to work right now, so I'm going to be on my phone.
Okay, that's fine then. All right, I'll look it up myself after the show. Let's do that. So let's look up CMS CDC connection? Because it sounds to me like the CMS, the Central Medicaid Medicare payment system, is being used by the CDC, by the health bureaucracies, to enforce their guidelines, which are actually death guidelines, you know, to kill people with remdesivir, because Gilead, you know, makes a ton of money off it, which means Dr. Fascist makes money on the royalties and the other things. We've got this case of the NIH. Well, let me, I'll give this a second. It's kind of interesting. Just finish this article.
Ivermectin and hydrochloroquine are so much cheaper compared to remdesivir and a ventilator. Why wouldn't they do the cheaper one first? It makes no sense.
Because they don't make money on them. They make money on the expensive treatments. They make, you know, you've got remdesivir at $3,200 a pop. You've got hydroxychloroquine at 20 cents. You know, you've got a ventilator versus, you know, sunshine and vitamin D. You know, you've got zinc either in supplement form or in pumpkin seeds. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways of doing this. This is why I have Paulette on. We're going to start talking about independent health and ways to improve your health with diet, exercise, and natural cures. You know, there's so many good things out there. I mean, garlic and onions are probably better than most antibacterial antibiotics and antivirals. You know, and they're cheaper too. Anyway, here's a quick story. Moderna COVID-19 vaccine patient dispute headed to court. And this is from November 10th. So this has been around for a couple of weeks. So I'll just do this briefly, just the headline. Julie Steinhuysen, H-U-Y-S-E-N, Chicago, Reuters. U.S. National Institutes of Health scientists played a major role in developing Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine. See, that was a cooperative government joint. So Moderna's full of scandal. Moderna's basically a government-chartered company, right? COVID-19 vaccine, and the agency intends to defend its claim as co-owner of patents to the shot. So wait a minute, why is the NIH, why is the National Institute for Health, a taxpayer-funded organization, owning patents to a commercial product? You want to talk about follow the money? That's a story for you.
Exactly. Right,
so we're going to pick up that story in a little bit, but I'm going to start looking into this money connection here. Let me just finish this up from the Tampa Bay Times. It's actually a pretty good quote. This is our same favorite senator now, my new favorite senator, Jeff Brandis. And the article says, only one Republican senator pushed back on legislation Tuesday. Senator Jeff Brandis of St. Petersburg, a libertarian-leaning senator in his final year in office because of term limits. That's really unfortunate, but maybe I can get him doing some action radio stuff if he hasn't quite thought of what to do next with his life. This is Brandis came out against a proposal to spend $1 million to help the DeSantis office come up with a plan for a plan to replace federal oversight of workplaces with state oversight by creating a new agency. So that doesn't seem accurate. It seems like we went over that there is a Florida OSHA, but that the plan, that the $1 million, it sounds like a pork plan to me. They're authorizing in law for the state to come up with a plan for their plan. You know exactly what they're saying here. He says, I think it's absolutely the growth of government on something as a Republican we've taken a strong stand against over time. Brandis also noted the silence of the business owners and leaders who usually side with Republicans and will be most affected by a dramatic change in workplace safety oversight. So why is the business so silent? Well, because the employers have all the rights. That's why employers get all the goodies in these bills. The employees are the ones who suffer. Which brings us to our last bill. And again, if the session ends today, which it probably will, I'm not going to do this again. We'll do totally different things tomorrow. We've got actually Jonathan Mosley is going to talk about Steve Bannon. That's a question that Gene had. And I want to talk to Claire about this virtual conference where Xi Jinping, you know, gave Biden his instructions to proceed with his insurrection. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to what he has to say about Steve Bannon because, I'm going to get the popcorn out. This is going to be really interesting. The dirt that comes up,
Adjusting chair. Here we go. I still have my chair that's sinking down. I still have my nose occasionally at the microphone level. Okay. So the last bill, and this is the most complex, and I'll just mention a few parts here as I get to them. Senator Burgess is the one for the Senate. There's a House member. You can look it up who it is. But this is probably – this may actually be considered right now. But this is the general bill. This is the big bill they're putting in, an act relating to COVID-19 mandates, creating a new statute, 381, 0.00317. So you normally end at 315, but this is their new segment. So I'm going to skip over what they say they're going to do and say just some of what the law actually says. So here you go. So section 381.00317, private employer COVID-19 vaccine mandates prohibited. This is a private employer may not impose a COVID-19 vaccination mandate for any full-time, part-time, or contract employee without providing individual exemptions that allow an employee to opt out of such requirement on the basis of medical reasons. Does that sound good? Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, all right, so an employer may not impose a COVID-19 vaccine mandate, all right? And then part A, to claim an exemption based on medical reasons, including but not limited to pregnancy or anticipated pregnancy, the employee must present to the employer an exemption statement. So in other words, there is no blanket exemption. You're not exempt just because you say you want to be exempt. You've got a medical reason. You got to present a statement. It says dated and signed by a physician or a physician assistant who holds a valid active license, who has examined the employee. So it's not enough to have a statement that you say that you can't go to your employer and say, I've already had COVID, or I have an autoimmune disease, or I have an allergy to vaccines. You can't say that. You actually have to go to a physician. So this is what I'm saying, all the burdens on the employee. So you think they're doing something good because the title of the bill says private employer COVID-19 vaccine mandates prohibited. That sounds really good. Well, wait a minute. Then I look down in the bill a little bit. It's like, there's conditions. Okay. So you got to get to, and it says the statement must provide that in the professional opinion of the physician, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. COVID-19 vaccination is not in the best medical interest of the employee. Well, doesn't that fall under HIPAA? Why would you have to disclose to your employee the exact reasons why it's not a good idea to get it? Isn't that covered already, or am I wrong, Jean?
Yeah, you shouldn't have to tell your employer why. It's none of their business. If you do a religious exemption or whatever, should be enough. You don't have to give. And in fact, they say when you do an exemption, don't write pages. Very brief. That's it.
Yeah.
Boom. To the point.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't want detail.
And yet this law that is being considered today that's supposed to ban, supposed to provide for medical exemptions, puts the burden on the employee, which is exactly what I said before. This is where I got it from. Right? I read this last night and this morning. So the statement was provided that the Department of Health shall adopt rules specifying circumstances that are considered an anticipated pregnancy. Well, I mean, how much pregnancy is pretty well defined, isn't it, in law and health? Why would the Department of Health have to adopt rules specifying circumstances that are considered an anticipated pregnancy? What the hell does that mean, Gene?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep. But it says including but not limited to a maximum time frame within which one anticipates pregnancy for the purpose of claiming an exemption under this paragraph. What are they saying? Well, we might have sex next month, and the ovulation date is here, so our anticipated pregnancy window is the next 12 months. Is that what they're getting at? Is that what they're trying to say? Is it that personal? That makes no sense.
No, not at all.
So you have to define not only if you're pregnant, but if you plan to get pregnant, and what time window within which you plan to get pregnant.
But then what happens if you plan on getting pregnant, you try to get pregnant, and you don't get pregnant. So then what? Do they come back and find you or something because you didn't get pregnant?
That's a really good question. I have no idea. That's why this law should be voted down. Let's get part B. To claim an exemption based on religious reasons, the employee must present to the employer an exemption statement. Here we go again. All right. Indicating that the employee declines COVID-19 vaccination because of a sincerely held religious belief. Now, what the hell, if you'll excuse my pun here, is the difference between a sincerely held religious belief and a religious belief? Can you help me out? You see what I'm getting at?
Well, a religious belief is a religious belief, and it's so interesting because so many places, entities mm-hmm. say you cannot deny someone a religious belief. However, mm-hmm. some facilities, places of work are not even looking at them. They're just denying them right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's illegal too. But look at it this way: if an employee actually goes through these machinations and creates a statement or gets a statement, you know, from a religious official, which I am now, I'm a minister by the New Life Church, which is kind of funny. So if anybody needs an exemption, I don't want to get into that. Go for something a little more stature. But anyway. But the point being, what if your employer says that, you know, you've not demonstrated that your religious belief is sincere? I mean, you're leaving it to your employer to judge the constitutionality of your religious belief. That's
right.
Insane.
And like I said, they're not supposed to be able, they can't do that. I mean, it's illegal to do that, but they are. Because I don't care what your religious belief is. If you believe that, you know, you can't have the vax because, you know, you don't believe in pricking your skin. It don't matter what your religious belief is. It's your religious belief.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, granted,
who's
things like voodoo and animal sacrifice, you know. Yeah.
Not?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, when religions get an animal sacrifice and other things, I think you're straying beyond religion. What we're generally talking about with religion, and I know there are exceptions, but we're talking mainstream religions, you know, Christian, Jewish, Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, you know, those, and all the variations of Christianity, you know, that even if it's Billy Bob's, you know, Church of the Corner, you know, Church of the Holy Roller Donut, you know, I mean, whatever it is, those are still religions. But when you start getting weird stuff, you know, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of, like, I think it was Pianchi brought up, what about Satan worship? I didn't want to get into that, but, you know, I mean, if someone's a Satan worshiper and they're against vaccines, is that as valid as a Christian? Just a thought.
Yes, because it's a religious belief. You know, we can't think one religion is more important than the other.
Okay, that makes sense.
We don't have to agree with that religion, but it's what they believe. I mean, if someone, I don't know. It's just crazy, but there's no consistency with anything that's going on right now.
Yep. So you have to prove that that you're medically, you know, not up for this. What is the three things we've got here? To claim an exemption for medical reasons, you have to go through a whole bunch of stuff. To claim an exemption for religious reasons, you have to go through a bunch of stuff, proving you're sincere. Part C, to claim an exemption based on COVID-19 immunity, in other words, you've already had it, right? The employee must present to the employer an exemption statement. Here we go. I know this is written by big business. Big business is all over this law, right? Exemption statement demonstrating competent medical evidence that the employee has immunity to COVID-19, documented by the results of a valid laboratory test performed on the employee. The Department of Health shall adopt a standard for demonstrating competent medical evidence of such immunity. So in other words, it's all on the employee. The employer doesn't even have to prove that the vaccine works. This is the part that kills me. There's nothing in here on the employer. This is why this law should be voted down.
Right. And the thing is, showing immunity, immunity. Okay, I have to go to a lab to have my blood drawn, and then they're going to run tests. And you trust the federal government on that?
Well, this is the same government
that
gave you the PCR test.
Not going to manipulate it?
Yeah, you know the PCR test with like 90% false positives? The test that was never designed to detect COVID, the one the government required, which doesn't work. You know, that's the same government that's going to develop standards for this to prove your immunity. I don't think so. Let's get Pianchi in on the conversation. We've got about 23 minutes. I want to make sure I get through this bill. This is turning out to be more important than I thought. Pianchi?
Well, there is no test on religion. She said, this is something that the government has thrown back onto the employers, and it shouldn't be allowed to stand. What it's doing, you're discriminating. You discriminated for one person based on what they're saying. If your religion say that your body, your temple, your body is God's temple, and you don't want to contaminate that temple, well, that's your prerogative.
But the state of Florida, the legislation of Florida is considering a legislation that says the employer determines whether your belief is sincere or not. That your employer determines whether you've had a competent test proving your immunity. That your employer determines whether you have a medical exam. That your employer determines whether you're in a period of potential pregnancy. This thing needs to be voted down. This sucks.
Well, yes, it should be voted down because now what you got a government respecting some entity that's supposed to either respect or disrespect your religion. And another important thing that you said earlier about Occupational and Safety Health Acts, it's not what the employee bring to harm the company. It's what the company is indulged in that harms the employee. That's where the health comes in.
Right. Exactly.
No, that's what OSHA's always been about, because the managers don't do the work. They're sitting in their offices wearing their shirts and ties, you know, and professional business suits. They're not out there actually, you know, grinding stuff and making the stuff and, you know, mixing the stuff and pouring the steel and all the other things that go on. All right. Well, maybe that's
no,
some
but
robots
it's,
now
it's
too.
Just
yeah.
things that can happen in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Not someone,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm like, what are they going to start doing? Someone brings the flu in? And now what? OSHA has to get involved?
Yeah. Let me give you a few more things here, because this is a big bill and I want to get through. I'm going to have to pick up some of this tomorrow. But here's another one. Part D, to claim any – I'll just get this first section done today. To claim an exemption based on periodic testing. So in other words, that when they – if you say you don't want a vaccine but your company has, you know, a weekly test, this is to claim an exemption based on periodic testing. The employee – it's always the employee, right? Must present to the employer an exemption statement. Here we go again. Indicating that the employee agrees to comply with regular testing for the presence of COVID-19 at no cost to the employee. So at least they got that part in there, at no cost to the employee. I thought I was going to say employer. But so at least they say, but it's still an employee condition. Here we go. To claim an exemption based on employer-provided personal protective equipment, the employee must present to the employer an exemption statement indicating that the employee agrees to comply with the employer's reasonable written requirement. Well, I was to say what's reasonable. To use employer-provided personal protective equipment. Okay, I understand that. All right, let me go a bit further down there. But basically, I still see all the burdens on the employee. Nothing is required of the employer to at least demonstrate or certify that the vaccine that they're requiring actually works and is not dangerous. If the employee has to certify that their procedures, their immunity, their religious beliefs are sincere, why shouldn't the employer have to certify that what they're forcing the employee to do? By company policy now, because the mandate's been over, there's an injunction against the mandate. But why shouldn't the employer have to prove that what they're requiring is actually safe for the employee? There's no such requirement here,
well,
and there should be.
Well, Greg, you tell me this. We're supposed to wear, like, the N95. Wear it at one time in with the patient. When COVID struck, you wore it for 2 to 3 weeks, and if you asked for a different one, they would look at you like, wow, what do you mean you need another one? And you go to patient after patient because you never take it off. Where was OSHA then?
That's a good question. Because what you're doing is violating
you know,
the directions
crap.
On the N95 is good for what?
Because they
3 hours?
Didn't know how many masks they were going to have. That's why they did that. That's bullshit. That's not OSHA. You either have a rule or you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely understand. And I think the N95 is only good for what, 3 hours? Maybe 4 hours at the most with one patient?
No, you're supposed
well, you
to wear it with the
thing.
Patient you're with and then throw it away for the next patient and get
okay,
a new
so
one.
Only,
but no,
so,
they
so,
didn't.
So, interesting. It's only good for one patient. Okay, that's good to get out there. Pianki? No, she's absolutely right.
And that should be on the expense. That's on the expense of the employer for an employee to go take a drug test so that he can have see whether he's got drugs in his system that would hamper his ability and make it dangerous for him to do the job on the project that he knows. That expense falls on the employer. Safety equipment on the employer. So now they're trying to throw it on the employee, which is not right.
See, I've always been against random drug tests because that's unconstitutional. Random searches, blanket searches. If you're going to search somebody, you need a warrant and you need probable cause, and that applies to drugs as well as anything else. So pre-employment screenings, all that sort of blanket screening stuff, that's all illegal. It's always been unconstitutional. We put up with it, but it's not good. All right, let me get you another one here. An employee, this is part... If an employer receives a completed exemption statement authorized by subsection 1, which we went through, the employer must allow the employee to opt out. Okay, good. An employee may file – here's when things go wrong. An employee may file a complaint with the Department of Legal Affairs alleging that an exemption has not been offered or has been improperly applied or denied in violation of this section. If the department investigates and finds that the exemption was not offered or was improperly applied or denied, it must notify the employer of its determination and allow the employer the opportunity to cure the noncompliance. Well, how long does that take? We just had David Jones on earlier from Santa Rosa Volunteers saying he tried to complain to a state agency, and they weren't going to have anything for him until January. Well, January 26th. Well, the mandates for all these people with these illegal vaccines is, I think, January 4th. So they've already put put the appointments past when this is going to be moot because everybody's supposed to get it anyway. So what the hell good is that?
Well, what you're witnessing.
Okay, Pianki,
you know,
then Gene.
What they're doing
is
crazy.
Yeah.
You know, what you're witnessing is that this whole COVID fiasco is starting to die out, and they're trying to resurrect it with any means necessary.
Yep.
It's dying out. All these issues, all these excuses, all these threats, and all these scare tactics, people are starting to see through it, and they're trying to maintain it. Now, the thing is, what is the incentive for them to maintain making people get vaccinations? And where is it coming from?
Well, it's coming from the big pharma and big government pharma. That's where it's coming from. They're all making money off it. I got that court case. I'm going to go over that tomorrow probably on the show of Moderna is battling the National Institute for Health over patents to a vaccine. Well, what the hell is the government doing fighting over a patent so they can make money on it? It's one thing to fight over a patent to dispute between the parties. That's what the trademark and patent office does. But the idea that the National Institute for Health is competing with a private company for profit?
Here's another thing.
They shouldn't be in business.
When you go to a doctor and a doctor gives you some samples, is not that doctor being paid by their pharmaceutical to distribute those samples?
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
If they want to put all these stipulations on the employee, then make the pharmacy pay for it. Make the pharmaceuticals pay for these things, the masks, the transportation to go get the shots and all these expenses that we're trying to incur to the employee.
Well, the employer should have to pay for any of that stuff. But here's the thing, though. The question is not the expense. The question is the mandate. Does a company have the ability, the legal ability to mandate this now, especially since the Fifth Circuit says that the government has no legal ability to mandate it? Okay, so now you're in an interesting area. You're saying that a company can mandate something that the federal government has been specifically prohibited from mandating and can't take any action to mandate it while it's under court review. So how is it corporations can do it when the government can't? If it's against the law, it's against the law. If mandates are illegal, it can't be legal for a corporation to do something and not for the government to create a mandate for it. Why is a company mandate legal and the government mandate isn't? That makes no sense to me. I would challenge it on that basis alone.
Well, corporations shouldn't be making public law anyway. Public law is to be made by elected government officials.
Right. So they become state actors, it's called. Jonathan Mosley taught us this concept, that a corporation that enforces a government policy then becomes a government, and they're treated as a government, which means that people have all their due process rights and search and seizure rights and protections and warrant protections and all that kind of stuff. If you want to give someone a vaccine, you should have to go through an entire amount of due process like I outlined in my public health bill. If someone has a demonstrated symptomatic, dangerous or lethal communicable disease, yes, you can do something with them. Okay, you isolate and quarantine them, but you can't force a bunch of treatments on them, you know, without their consent. But you can certainly isolate and quarantine them so they don't get anybody else sick, all right? And so that makes sense to me. You know, that seems to me a reasonable thing to do with someone that has a dangerous, demonstrated dangerous disease. But you can't take a bunch of healthy people and lock them up because they might have been exposed to somebody, maybe. That's what's going on now. All right. Looks like there's some fines involved in this. It says for companies that violate the provisions here. So the only thing that's on the employer, after they've made the employee jump through all the hoops, the employer with fewer than 100 employees can get a $10,000 fine. An employee with more than 100 employees, an employer with more than 100 employees can get a $50,000 fine. That's the maximum. They've set the maximum. Now, I'm sorry, but $50,000 to a large corporation is nothing. They're paying more than that in overtime for people, for all the people they're firing. You know, those are pretty wimpy penalties, if you ask me. How much compliance are you going to get with a $10,000 fine and a $50,000 fine maximum? Panel, what do you think?
And, yeah, they deduct that from their gross income tax.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Yep. There's more to it here, but I'll let you all sort of read this over. We only got about 12 minutes left here. There's a bunch of details. Let me see if I can find a new section for it, because this is complicated stuff here. Oh, they've got a new section here. prohibition on public employee COVID-19 vaccination mandates. All right, so yeah, that's probably interesting to go through. Let me do that one tomorrow because I don't want to just shortchange it and let you know what's going on. But if you want to find all this stuff is all available at, let me see where I've got, flsenate.gov/home, 11-16-2021. And you can find all these bills. And the bills that are being considered right now, you got the pairs. You've got the general bill that I was going over just now. The House version is from Growl and Masullo. And you've got the Senate by Senator Burgess. You've got the bills on public records, which I think is a good thing to keep those confidential. The House bill is in the Commerce Committee, and the Senate bill is, I'm not sure where it is, but that was by Burgess again. So Burgess seems to be the person doing these House bills. The third one is Occupational Safety and Health Plan, the one we went over earlier, the House bill by Representative Zika, and the Senate bill by Senator Hudson, H-U-T-S-O-N. And the last one, the one that is the most popular in terms of writing about it, the one that only takes out the word vaccination or vaccine five times, the House version is by Alex Andrade, who's my representative, and then the Senate one by Senator Bean, and that's Senate Bill 8, House Bill 7. So those are the ones. So there's 8 bills, but there are basically 4 because the House and Senate bills are paired. And that's where we stand right now. That's where we are. Ladies and gentlemen, any issues to cover here? Otherwise, I have a couple more articles, but that's pretty much it. And like I said, I'll get to the bill in a little bit. Yeah, Jean, go ahead.
I just got a question. The special session, it's only so many days, and that's it, correct?
Right. Uh-huh.
Because that's a joke. Why can't they deliberate up more the bill? I mean, so they get it right.
That's a good question.
Or do they not
want to get it right?
They just want to go through the motions.
Well, the governor had a very specific proclamation, which I went over. I can dig it out again. Like I said, don't probably have enough time. But basically, from my memory, he wanted A through J things that, you know, there's like 10 things he wanted to accomplish in these bills. Well, maybe we'll drag it out. It won't take me too long to go for it. But the biggest one was to get rid of that vaccine mandate by any means necessary. That's the one he really DeSantis really wanted to get out of there. And the other one was basically to block vaccine mandates and mask mandates. But the way they've done it is to get out of them, you have to, the employee, as far as work goes, these employees have to have all these exemptions. And they have to go through all these hoops to get those exemptions. It seems to be much more complicated than it should be. All right, so here we go. Governor's proclamation. This is from October 29th. So here's what the governor wanted. Get past the whereases and you get to the good stuff. He says legislature is convened special session, you know, Monday running until Friday at the latest. The legislature of the state of Florida is convened in special session for the sole and exclusive purpose of considering legislation to, one, protect workers against COVID-19 vaccine mandates and address employer policies that force COVID-19 vaccination. Okay, that's not being done, and we already proved that all the burden's on the employee to try and get out of it. The second, clarify the Florida law that vests student masking decisions in the hands of parents and strengthen enforcement of the protections of the Parents' Bill of Rights. Okay, that wasn't done at all. We did. We had an entire bill. We have an entire bill on parental rights. The legislature, not a single one of those 4 bills deals with parental rights. So that they failed on that regard. The things that the governor requested they do, protect current and prospective employees against unfair discrimination on the basis of COVID-19 vaccination. That wasn't done. Ensure that educational institutions and government entities are prohibited from unfairly discriminating against current and prospective employees. There is something in that in the later part of the bill. We'll get to that. Ensure that employees, this is Part C, improperly denied employment on the basis of COVID-19 vaccine status can be eligible for re-employment benefits. I think that's covered. Oh, I'll check it out. Appropriate and sufficient amounts of funds to investigate complaints regarding COVID-19. I guess that's they're sort of working on that. Here's the one they didn't do, the one that I really focused on. Clarify that the Parents' Bill of Rights, Chapter 1014, Florida Statutes, vests the decision on masking with parents, not government entities, and that schools must comply with Department of Health rules that govern student health, including rules that ensure healthy students can remain in school. They didn't do that, as far as I can tell. And I think there's already governor's orders that they have to do that, but I don't think there's anything I don't think there's anything coming out of the legislature. And of course, limits mandates on school districts provide adequate enforcement mechanisms, direct the state to evaluate whether they should assert jurisdiction over occupational safety and health, whether they got a plan for that. Here's the big one. This is part I of you know, A through J. Repeal the authority for the state health officer to order forced injections or vaccinations under Section 381.00315, Florida statutes, okay? And then they have to create, as necessary, public records exemptions. Well, they did that. But this repealing of forced vaccinations, the only thing they did on that, the only thing was to take the word vaccination out five times. They didn't actually repeal the authority under treatment and by any means necessary. So they failed in that regard. I think we've succeeded where they failed multiple times. But that's the situation. Where is everybody?
Yes, yes, no, it does make sense.
Don't do that to me.
The thing is, Greg, I don't understand why they're even having a special session, because really they're getting a squad done. And if you really look at it, all of them should be voted out too, because they're really not doing anything to help the workforce. And, you know, I don't know if the hospitals there are really for people getting vaccinated or if they're just doing it preemptively because they know it's coming down from the federal government. But it's like, it's crazy because the vaccine, there's no proof that says it works. And there's all this proof that says all this side effects. People are dying. They said that if it had been any other medication, it would have been taken off. It had been gone away with a long time ago.
It should have been. Where's the Consumer Product Safety Commission? Don't they regulate consumer products? I mean, we know the FDA is bought and paid for. But why wouldn't Consumer Product Safety take a look at these things? Unless they're specifically prohibited because it's a medical product and it falls under the FDA. But the FDA is bought and paid for by Big Pharma. All those drug trials that the FDA has to do before they approve stuff, who do you think pays for them? The drug companies. So where's the interest, you know, in terms of getting those things passed? Remember, everything that was recalled by the FDA was at one time approved by the FDA. And they're the problem.
Yeah, see, that's clear.
Yeah. Got about 6 minutes left. I don't want to start a whole new topic here. I'm going to go back to that bill. We're going to see what happens today. So everybody want to check out, watch the website. So I'm going to see if I can post something from the rally yesterday. And get you going there. Let me actually, in the last few minutes here, because I've got a couple more stories, I want to get more into this Moderna thing. I want to show you just how corrupt people are. This is U.S. News. This is a regular mainstream news source on November 10th, talking about the court case between Moderna and the National Institute for Health. This is in a story first reported by the New York Times on Tuesday, I guess that'd be before November 10th. Moderna excluded three NIH scientists as co-inventors of a central patent for the company's multi-billion-dollar COVID-19 vaccine in its application filed in July. Here's a quote from let me see here. I'll find out who – they always put the person in the middle. He says, I think Moderna has made a serious mistake here in not providing the kind of co-inventorship credit to people who played a major role in the development of the vaccine that they're now making a fair amount of money off of. And that's Collins. And who is Collins? Collins, I think I probably mentioned him earlier. Dr. Francis Collins. Oh, here we go, NIH director. So the director of the National Institute for Health is saying that he wants money. They want a co-inventorship credit for making the stuff Moderna is selling. So in other words, not only do they want their taxpayer-paid salary, they want to sue in court to get money from a private company for a product that they say they helped create. I find that fascinating.
Well, you know, Greg, I think then the people that lost loved ones are those that have been permanently harmed by the jab should sue. Mm-hmm. And I know you say they can't sue, but you know what I would do? Well, can't you for something?
Well,
I mean,
for what?
Is there any loophole way they could sue if a person died, you know, for their family members to get compensation, or a person that can no longer work, or a child that was taking the jab? And now they can't participate in sports, and you know they got myocarditis, which most people die in 5 years. They said.
As far as I know,
I don't know if that's true or not, but.
Well, it's funny.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
It's funny how they can take immunity from police officers. It's funny how George Floyd's family can sue for damages. Well, you're forced, mandated to take a vaccine, and you don't have that due process. Something's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Let me see if I've got some things here. So what the government did was they took out all the liability. Let me see if I can get you the exact section in law. Because here's current law. It's Title 42, U.S. Code, Section 300AA-22, Standard of Responsibility. Section Part B, Unavoidable Adverse Side Effects Warnings. 1. No vaccine manufacturer shall be liable in a civil action for damages arising from a vaccine-related injury or death associated with the administration of a vaccine after October 1st, 1988. You get that? No vaccine manufacturer shall be held liable. That's right in the law. I'm reading it right here, okay. Title 42, U.S. Code, Section 300. Yeah.
Well, that needs to be changed. But you know what? I would also like
to, try to build
say
to change
is
it.
I think Biden and those people mandating the vaccine need to be sued because they're not exempt. They're mandating it. They're saying you got to do it or
no, they're government employees.
Job. So
they're government employees. They're immune. This is what
you know. This
is
really funny.
Go ahead.
This is funny. If you got a sexually transmitted disease, if you got HIV/AIDS, and you have sex with somebody, then you are liable for the harm that you caused them.
Absolutely.
But now they are not liable for the harm that's caused by the untested and verified vaccine. This is really
an emergency. We're still in an emergency declaration for a virus that the alpha strain died out back in July of 2020. Yep. Now you understand the hypocrisy.
Greg, and the sad thing is they don't even know that the vaccine works. To me, it doesn't work if there's a lot of people that are vaccinated getting it, number one, and they're getting sent to the hospital, maybe not the same rate as unvaccinated, but also they're also dying, some of them.
Yeah. Not only do they not know if it works, they don't have to prove if it works either. That's the other thing. We've got about 5 seconds left. But, yeah, that's the part. That's the problem here. They don't have to prove it works. Not only are they not liable, there's absolutely no accountability on the employers, on the government, on anybody to prove that this thing works, that they're mandating. That just is not part of the criteria. On that note, I have to leave you all. We're going to pick it up again tomorrow. I'm going to go through the rest of that bill, and we'll see what happens in the legislative session today. And if some of these onerous bills pass, then it's going to be up to us to try and get them amended in the regular session in January. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And you can catch our bills at www.writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. Back tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 Pacific. And the rest of the world, check your time zone. We'll be back tomorrow.
Have a good